Missed an episode of Writer's Block? Listen to every episode and subscribe with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on Demand. You're experiencing Writer's Block with Jeff Blair and Richard Deitch on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Damn, it's Monday already. Writer's Block with Blair and Deitch.
Did you have a good weekend?
Yeah, it was quiet. It was still too wet to do any yard work, so that was good.
Had a couple.
That's my highlight.
That's your highlight?
Yeah, that's my highlight.
Had a couple birthday parties that took the kids to.
Did you get anything good out of it, or was it just for the kids?
I mean, they're at this point between Halloween and parties. It's just a festival of
bad
parenting.
Yeah, I was going to say, let me guess, they got to bed about 3 o'clock each night this weekend?
Honestly, I don't think they've had like a healthy meal in like 4 days. That's really bad parenting.
They sound like future sports writers to me.
So I had a lot of cupcakes, but.
Cupcakes are good.
Yeah. It was.
When did cupcakes become a thing for birthdays, by the way?
Well, I can tell you that.
It used to be cake, right?
Yeah,
now it's cupcakes.
Living in New York, like in the mid-90s, early 2000s, cupcakes became the vogue. I think it was because of Sex and the City, that show on HBO, which sort of pushed a lot of
cupcakes
in their content. It might have been something else, but there was a stretch. I don't know if it hit.
I mean, there was
here.
A lot pushed in that show.
Yeah, no kidding. A lot more than cupcakes.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
I don't know if that hit up here as well, but there was like a serious cupcake craze in New York.
Yeah, it was a big thing. I don't know, but well, I mean, I know that there are actually, you know, in Hamilton, there's Bitten, which is a company that makes cupcakes.
Good.
And whoopie pies.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Real good. Real good. But anyhow, I just don't know. I'm still a birthday cake guy.
Birthday cake's delicious, depending on what it is.
Still a birthday cake guy. But I think it's probably a little more, for kids, it's a little more, young kids, you know. Because let's face it, you go to a young kid's birthday party, and half the time, no one ever eats a full piece of cake, right?
No, it's like it's half eaten.
It's half, exactly.
Like one of them eats
a little bit of leftover ice cream.
Yeah, yeah. One of mine eats just the frosting, and then sometimes leaves the cake.
Yeah,
like below, and then the other goes from the bottom up, like a beaver or something.
So they that's good.
They eat them different ways, but if you've ever been to like a kid's birthday party, it's like the final episode of like Game of Thrones with just fire and just destruction all around. It's ugly.
Our daughter's hair caught in fire during one of her birthday parties. She sizzled the front off. She leaned over to blow out the candles, and it was a little too close.
Very Hunger Games.
Father of the Year was probably running to get a beer.
Nice.
And I came back, and I thought, I can smell hair burning in here. And then I look, and oh, what happened to those curls?
See, I don't know this, but you would know this. But I'm curious.
Why would I know this?
Trust me, you're going to.
Okay.
Is Hamilton famous for a certain beer? Either type or brand.
I mean, it is. Now it's like every other place. There's a gazillion craft breweries Collective Arts and all those. I don't know. I mean, I think there was like Steeler or Steelback or something like that. Some sort of beer like that.
Going to college at the University of Buffalo way back in the day, you could buy, I think it still exists, Genesee beer.
Jenny. Yeah, Jenny Cream Ale is like, solid.
Literally, like, a 24-pack was, like, $2 or something insane like that.
It's not anymore, but.
Yeah, but that was, like, literally a purchase to buy just purely to get drunk on, like, for no money.
Yeah, it was when the Manitoba thing was to go to North Dakota and buy Grain Belt, which was pretty much as a.
What's that called, Grain Belt?
Grain Belt. Grain Belt beer.
So Jenny Ale still exists.
Yes, but I think it's become trendy. It's kind of, you know what?
Oh, really? Wow, they turned it around.
I think it's kind of trendy, just like Pabst, PBR became trendy.
Yeah, very trendy.
Yeah, I used to drink
and advertise on this show.
PBR, we used to just
be, it was a bleep show. It was
just horrible.
Yeah. Wow.
Which is a segue to what I wanted to talk about today. We have several things to talk about, but I need to address the Washington Nationals. I need to address the Washington Nationals.
Right now, currently at the White House.
Currently at the White House. Got to stop acting like hockey players, man. Got to stop taking the shirts off, riding around Zambonis, drinking. And here's the thing that gets me. Yeah, I don't want to be like the no fun police. But if you are going to be, if you're going to do it right, you know, if you're going to be in the luxury suite at the Washington Capitals game guzzling beer, man up and avoid Bud Light. Like, drink real beer. It amazes me how when people are in the midst of these celebrations or acting goofy, they're doing it with light beer. It just makes no sense. Yeah. Oh, this is, my new favorite major league player, by the way.
I happened to see this literally as we were walking in the studio.
Kurt Suzuki, the Washington Nationals, just went up to the podium at the White House and put on a Make America Great Again hat.
Yeah, Kurt, anybody can do what they want.
But anyhow, not really. But anyhow, I was saying that.
So
they acted like, you know.
I love that, though. I like when guys like do.
No, take
like,
their shirts off and ride around the Zamboni. Know, yeah, it's really classy.
But people, here's the thing. This is what I would say to you.
Joe DiMaggio doing. I can see all those guys riding around.
Joe DiMaggio
around.
Up as some paragon of anything.
I can see all those guys. First. I can see all those guys riding around with their shirts off. What is it? You know, you've won. Celebrate and move on. Now they're like hockey players with, you know, urinating in the Stanley Cup and drinking it and stuff like that, which is just not necessary.
Why does Ovechkin and others are celebrated for like partying? Like
I never celebrate them. I never celebrated them.
Don't you think people celebrated how the Caps sort of pushed the envelope on partying? So why would we counter the Nationals?
No, I think there are, you know, the bros out there probably think it's, there's a lot of bros probably think it's pretty cool. I think most normal human beings would look at that and go, really?
That doesn't bother me. I'm good with them on the ice. Peeing in a trophy seems absurd, but here's the thing, Jeff, you probably know this. As an individual Nationals player, do you get to keep the do you get a day with the trophy?
I don't believe so. I could be wrong. Nah.
So it's not like
I could be wrong because I know that the World Series trophy has gone to the Dominican Republic and it's gone to Puerto Rico. I don't know if you get a day with it.
I've never seen it up close. This is a dumb question, but can you hold it? Like,
it's nothing. Well, it's
heavy?
Yeah. It's a round thing with all the pennants of all the different teams on it. Adam Eaton essentially looked yesterday like he was going to try to. Yeah.
How do you get that on a flight?
It breaks. Yeah, things are always breaking.
Yeah.
To me, it's the most unimpressive. Well, the Super Bowl looks like it was done by a one-year-old. But to me, other than that, it's the most unimpressive trophy out there.
Yeah,
Stanley Cup is impressive. That's a big-ass sucker. You win that and you lift it up.
Not just that. That is far and away the best sports trophy by like leaps and bounds.
I would think so.
I'm not impressed by. Is there any baseball trophy out there that's actually like?
I kind of like the
Gold Glove.
No. The Gold Glove is.
That's all right.
Gold Glove-ish stuff is kind of neat. I kind of like the Silver Slugger.
Yeah, that's cool. I'll give you that.
No, I mean it's not the trophies themselves are lame. Anyhow, you went down the beer route and you provided me with a segue and I just, you know, enough. I was going to say act like you've been there before, even though I know a lot of guys haven't. It is remarkable, it is remarkable given how politically correct we are in this industry and other industries when it comes to beer, talking about beer, talking about alcohol, allowing sponsorship, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How politically correct we are. But then when a bunch of guys win something, we don't care what they do with the beer bottles, literally.
Sports organizations are the biggest hypocrites on earth anyway.
Yeah.
They go into sponsorship with beer partnerships, but so many of them are afraid of marijuana, cannabis.
Right.
Like the only thing you can count on when it comes to pro sports is that the morality will change when money comes in.
Or unless it's the NFL, in which case there's no morality at all.
Yeah, right. But you know what? For how many years of our life, Jeff, was the NFL always putting out there the dangers and ills of gambling? We can't go near this.
Yeah.
They're gonna rake billions on this more than any of the sports league. So when it comes to morality,
all morality
or patriotism,
means,
it's yeah. all.
All it means is we have not yet figured out a way how to make money off this.
It, of course.
Anyhow.
Yeah.
A busy weekend. The Toronto Maple Leafs won in the shootout to end all shootouts against the Philadelphia Flyers. The Kings are in town. And, this is kind of going to be the new thing after what Alexander Ovechkin said. Every time a team comes in town and it's won a Stanley Cup, or it has a player who's won a Stanley Cup, they are going to be asked, gee, do you think the Leafs can win the Stanley Cup? Drew Doughty got asked that today, said absolutely nothing of interest, so we're not playing it.
Good.
Which is good for Drew Doughty, because Drew Doughty essentially said, guys, whatever I say is going to sound stupid. I mean, whatever I say is going to come back to bite me.
Did he actually say that?
More or less.
Oh, that's good. Good
so
for
well
him,
done
though.
For him. Yeah. Well done. Well done. To
There's
you.
No if I, like I appreciated Alex Ovechkin's honesty. But if I was his media advisor, there's literally zero upside to to say anything.
No. I mean,
I got to focus on my team is all you should be saying. You know, even if you don't believe what you're saying, that's the answer.
That is the answer completely. Yeah. But anyhow, the Leafs practice today. Jason Spezza was not on any of the four lines. You got to wonder what the hell's going on there.
And he had a good game, I thought, against the Flyers.
I thought he did, too. But, you know, we already know that Mike Babcock is no fan of Jason Spezza.
Well, they're going to have some roster issues.
Yeah, they've got Hyman and Tavares coming back at some point. We'll discuss that, by the way, with Ashley Docking and Arash Madani on our roundtable today.
Travis McKenzie, our fine producer.
Now what?
This is a replica.
This is a replica World Series trophy?
Yeah, it seems like that would be heavy, the actual one.
Yeah, but it is kind of...
It's lame.
It's unimpressive.
Yeah,
I mean,
looks
really.
Like something that belongs.
And these suckers are all like, I know these suckers are always breaking.
Looks like it should have rotisserie chicken on it. Yeah, it's not that impressive.
Yeah,
is that the Blue Jays Phillies?
That you see what that says there? What does that say down there?
World Series champions, yeah. Toronto Blue Jays.
What are the two teams? Blue Jays, Jays Phillies. Phillies. Ergo, it would be the
Telemedia
Blue Jays
Network.
Phillies.
That still exists. I think so.
Anyhow, there you go. That's the World Series trophy, the one that was given to me by the Washington Nationals for my work when I covered the Montreal Expos. And that's going back to the Blair household.
Nice.
No, that is a replica of the world. And it's a big-ass replica. It's a heavy. But again, you know, look.
It's not, no. It's
like, what do you do? You can't drink out of it? You can't?
It's not an impressive trophy. I mean, there's too much going on.
Yeah.
It's,
you got the crown thing either.
Yeah, they got a weird crown thing in there.
But I don't even know if this may just be like one of those replicas. It may not even be a replica of the real thing.
I do wonder how
these bother me,
you're
though.
You're flying commercial, though. How do you get that on your flight?
Well, nobody's going to fly.
You check it in, I guess.
I guess so. Anyhow, there you go. So, yes, we'll talk to the roundtable about the Leafs playing the Kings this weekend. The Raptors losing to the Milwaukee Bucks.
Weird game.
It was a weird game. Like I said, I just think at times it's going to be a boring year for the Raptors this year. Big story out of that, I guess, Patrick McCaw and his knee injury. They are going into yesterday. There were only four teams in the NBA that had more turnovers than the Toronto Raptors. At some point, they're going to need another guard there. You just can't live with Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry and Pascal Siakam handling the ball every now and then. And with Patrick McCaw gone, at some point they're going to have to make another move. Somebody in.
I mean, two things from that. I mean, we could probably we do a whole segment on that, but off to a terrible start. Good for them to come back. Showed traditional sort of resiliency.
Mm-hmm.
Made a really, really nice run. If Marc Gasol hit a couple shots, it might have been a different game.
If Pascal stays in the game.
Yeah, I mean, and sort of that first quarter was just a very bad quarter for them. But, Jeff, the larger issue at hand, and this is going to start to bubble up here, is depth. They're playing their starters too many minutes.
They have played.
And it's going to catch. We're talking about an old – as great as Lowry is, he's an old point guard. And it's going to come. I think they almost are. If they're really going to go for it, they may have to make a trade. Because I don't know where else. If McCaw's hurt, I don't know where you're getting backcourt help from.
Yeah. I had a note in my column today that the Raptors have used the same starting lineup this year. Six games. You have to go back to 2017 to November to find the last time that Raptors used the same starting five games in a row. So, I mean, it could be a product of the fact that, as we've said, Nick Nurse is trying to figure out how his bench is going to be utilized. But it also, I think, suggests a lack of depth. And we'll know more in this road trip coming up. They've got Sacramento here on Wednesday. Then they go to the West Coast.
Pelicans,
two in L.A., Portland, Blazers, Dallas. And Dallas. I think they've got like five games in 8 days. So we'll probably get a better idea in that span of games how the Raptors plan on using some of the players. They've had one back-to-back so far, but it was the second or third game of the year. And to me, at that point, it's almost not even a back-to-back in the season.
At a certain Nick Nurse and his coaching staff are going to have to make a decision when it comes to trust on the, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson's, Terrence Davis's, Patrick McCaw, Stanley Johnsons, that, you know, they're going to have to get to 9 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if it's not on this roster, then you have to go out and find who it is. But, you know, if they're – Nick Nurse was very, very vocal, Jeff, in the preseason about Ronnie Hollis Jefferson and Stanley Johnson. And sort of the reading between the lines was, I don't trust them. So yeah. I almost feel like you need to play those guys to sort of see if you – you know, what they are and if
– Well, yeah. And, you know?
If they're not the answer, then figure out the answer.
I guess the saving grace for the Raptors in this road trip west is twofold. One, they don't go to Denver, and Denver just sucks the life. The altitude sucks the life out of players, and it generally requires a day or so to sort of recover from playing in Denver. And two, the back-to-back is in L.A., so they don't have to leave their hotel room. Or I should say they don't have to check out of the hotel. So that's not a horrible thing. But, of course, it also means we'll get the sort of Kawhi Leonard, state of Kawhi Leonard.
That'll be the story that day. You know, and the Lakers and Clippers are good. I mean, they're
I was the guy saying I thought the Lakers would be life and death to make the playoffs. Lakers look really good.
Yeah, I mean,
Lakers look really good.
That, you know, I think if I know we'll talk to Paul Jones later, but, like, I almost wonder if, like, you know, if you go 1-3 between those four games
–
maybe you're happy. Obviously, 0-4 would suck, and 2-2 would be a dream. But that, you know,
well, you've
both
got a
LA teams
you've got a
are tough.
They
and
are.
Then I watched.
You got a couple of days before Dallas, though.
But
so
who did I see Dallas play against the other night?
The
Lakers.
Yeah,
Dallas is pretty good. I think that's a winnable game, but they're certainly, you know, Porzingis and Luka Doncic, they're a better team than they were a year ago, and I think Portland is just excellent. Especially at home, that's a good place.
I mean, I feel guilty. I'm like becoming a Portland Trailblazers fan. I love watching them play. They are fun to play.
Yeah.
And of course, look, we saw what New Orleans did in the first game here in Toronto. They pushed the Raptors. So, we'll get a better handle. We'll get a better idea of where this team stands, even though it is early in the year, of where this team stands in terms of depth, in terms of rotation, in terms of expectations for different players after this week coming up. And as we mentioned, the week starts with a game against Sacramento here at Scotiabank Arena.
I was just going to say really quickly, Wednesday. I think they'll be up for the Clippers game. That's the one game, I think, because Kawhi is there, actually, they'll be up for. The Lakers, we'll see. That'll be interesting. I'll be really curious to see how they approach that game.
The Portland game,
Portland feels like a 20-point loss.
I was going to say, that kind of sets up your road trip, the Portland game, I think.
If you
A, win in Portland, or B, play well in Portland, that might set you up.
I hope they do, but I have to admit that's the one game that I really don't have a good feeling for them. That's a hard place to win, and
you know what? Your guards are going to be pressured all game long. They're going to be pressured by Portland. So, to get you set for today, we mentioned the roundtable. Ashley Docking, who's co-host of Leadoff with Ashley Ziggy and Scotty Mack. That's our morning show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And Arash Madani, fresh off his World Series coverage, they will join us from 4 to 5 for the Monday roundtable. Amy Trask, NFL analyst with CBS Sports. Remember the question we asked going into the weekend about New England and Baltimore? Who would we learn more about out of that? We learned an awful lot about Lamar Jackson.
It looked awesome.
We'll talk to Amy Trask about that. Shai Davidi, our MLB insider at Sportsnet, joins us. The Jays have made a move, acquiring Chase Anderson, who will, if things go according to plan, be their fifth starter. That would, I'd say, probably be the optimal scenario, be the Jays' fifth starter this year. They gave up Chad Spanberger, who was, you know, never going to make it to the majors with the Blue Jays. And it's a depth move, if anything else, but we'll talk to Shai about that. Mr. Deitch already mentioned our Raptors radio analyst Paul Jones joins us. We'll take a look back at that Milwaukee game, what we learned about the Bucks and the Raptors in that game. I mean, one thing I did learn watching Indiana a little bit this weekend as well, Malcolm Brogdon really, really, really is a big miss for that team. But in a few minutes, Jeff Merrick is host of Hockey Central, Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey, the NHL on Sportsnet, 31 Thoughts, and Ice Surfing. He'll join us in studio. We'll talk about that 11-round shootout win for the Leafs against the Flyers, and we'll discuss Jason Spezza and all manner of NHL things. Jeff Merrick's next. It's Writer's Block with Blair and Deitch on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Writer's Block. We've decided all week to play our guilty pleasures for those of you listening on radio. Deitch had the first one today. Put your mic on.
Thought I was thought that got popped up. Yeah, that would be Hazy Shade of Winter by the Bengals. Yeah, it was my first on my not ranked, but first on the list that I think.
Well, your list was a little other than the fact you called "Don't Fear the Reaper," "Don't Feel the Reaper" in your
what
email.
What I say, "Don't Fear the Reaper."
No, you called it "Don't Feel the Reaper." Don't.
Well, you shouldn't feel the Reaper either.
Well, I don't know. It depends. Have you talked to the Reaper lately? Don't feel the Reaper.
Whatever you do,
Mr. Merrick, do not feel the Reaper.
Freudian slips when you're thinking about one thing, but say a mother.
Exactly. Oh, very good. Thank I see you. What you
thank
did there.
You.
That
thank
that's
you.
Very good. Yeah. Jeff Merrick of, everything to do with hockey.
There we go.
Joining
Jeff,
us.
You'd appreciate this. My favorite.
Why do you always say you'd appreciate it? People may not appreciate
it. No, I know, because Merrick and I have the same sensibilities. We both like wrestling, and I think we'll both like just one of my selections was Common Man by William Shatner.
I saw you
common
tweet
people.
That, and I
common
had
people, common
I had,
man.
I know.
Well, I'm losing it today.
It's okay. It's all right. Don't worry about it. It's early.
No, it's literally Richard, common man.
Put a lot of thought into this.
Listen, Jeff, you don't know this. Richard bought a new tongue on the weekend. He's breaking it in early in the week. By the time the weekend comes around, it'll be fine. I had never heard that until I saw you tweet it.
Really?
And I was I just put the kids down to bed, and I'm like, hey, look at this Deitch tweet, because Common People is one of my favorite Pulp songs.
Of course.
Yeah.
And fantastic to see live as well. I'm like, I just wonder what this is like. And she's a Pulp fan too. She's actually from England, big Britpop fan. And so my jaw hit the ground.
What'd you think?
Fantastic.
Phenomenal.
Like
Ben Folds.
Have you played
Joe
it?
Joe Jackson.
Have you played
it'll
it?
Come no, later.
We're going to play it. Yeah. We're going to play
it's
it later.
Spectacular.
By the way, one of his choices as well was Brandy by Looking Glass. Brad Fay response, as only Fay would. Makes sense, because if there's one thing I've learned about Richard Deitch, it's that his life, his love, and his lady is the sea.
I just like that choice because I would be the worst sailor on earth. But yeah, for whatever reason, when that song comes on, I can't help myself but sing it.
Common People.
It's like Looking Glass.
And Don't Feel the Reaper. Don't feel the reaper, especially when the partner says take my hand. See you anyhow.
You know what, I'm at a point in my life where I'm not embarrassed about anything now. Like, I don't know if I have a guilty pleasure, because
I got
fine
a lot of stuff to be embarrassed
anything
about.
That I will listen to. That's just from maybe just the kids that I have. Yeah, have humiliated me enough. I'm just like, okay, you're not gonna do anything worse than what my kids can do.
Like I tell you, I tell people, I've been to 2 One Direction concerts.
Really?
Yeah. 2 One Direction concerts with my daughter and a Taylor Swift concert. No, that was with other people. That was in a suite, so that doesn't count. But
I remember going to see Madonna once and thinking, wow, I shouldn't brag about this until I saw how great she was, and then I was telling everybody.
See, I missed
how great it was.
Joe Carter's walk-off home run. I wasn't in Toronto then. I was in Montreal. I missed the game because I was at a Madonna concert.
And how great was it?
It was spectacular.
Not as good as the walk-off.
It was better than the walk-off. I wasn't a Jays fan. It was better than the walk-off.
That doesn't, I mean, I've never seen her in concert, but that doesn't surprise me. Given her,
fantastic.
Given her like attention to detail and stuff, you'd figure she'd be
tremendous.
You know what I loved about it? What I loved about that concert was no encores.
Yeah,
I love the artists that just come out and here's the set and here's what we're playing, and then don't make me act like a barking seal and clap for you to go through the process of here I am acting as a crowd member.
Okay, I'll come back and play the hit.
Oh, shucks. Yeah. No. She came on. She played her set. Good night.
The other thing, too, is...
loved it.
And again, it's 2019, so we probably don't appreciate it now because she's much older, but like there was a time when... Madonna was probably one of the 5 most famous people on the planet.
100% true.
Absolutely.
I mean, 100% like, people... true. You know, she's still obviously iconic, but nowhere near as famous as she used to be. But there was a time, like, literally, you know, think of whoever the person on the planet now who would get attention paparazzi and said that was her.
But it was different, too, because everybody was watching MTV at that point, and that made stars.
And like, she was also, you know, she started her own record company, and she was actually one of the first real female stars to sort of...
Yep.
Start making demands.
And unapologetically pushed sex to sell her and sell her brand. She was, in many ways, way ahead of her time.
There's no segue 100%. Between that and what we want to talk about.
Travis Dermott and sex.
Now, here we go. Freddie Anderson's performance in the shootout.
That's a hell of a shootout.
Okay, so he wouldn't bite on this. So we had Freddie Anderson on Hockey Central today, and he wouldn't bite on
dropping.
This. But
nice.
The one, I know. Can you help me pick that up, Richard? And throw my back out. So the one thing about that shootout is almost every single player tried to go 5-hole on both sides. It was remarkable. I'm sitting there watching this thing. I'm like, everyone's shooting 5. Everyone's shooting 5. It's like, okay, you think you'd mix it up a little bit. Here's a deke. We're going to go high. We're going to drop a shoulder. We're going underneath the block. None of it. Yeah. And I asked Freddie about it, and he wouldn't bite. There's no way I was getting the hook in the fish at all. That wasn't coming in the boat.
Right.
But that one thing that stood out for me from Saturday night was, and I don't know whether it's a book on both goaltenders. It certainly shouldn't be on Freddie Anderson. Everyone going five. I know the thing is move the goalies, open up the pads, and try to slip it through. We saw the Kucherov move by Austin Matthews, which is a standard now for some when you want to open up a goaltender. But everybody tried to go five-hole.
It's interesting. It's kind of, you almost get the impression that it's, after the first couple of times, it's, okay, they're not expecting it now because nobody's going to do it four in a row. Whoops. Okay, they're not expecting it now. Okay, nobody's going to do it five in a row.
Jeff, from talking to hockey people, is there any advantage or disadvantage to starting the penalty shot slow? It's interesting to me, the guys who sort of, nobody really goes full speed, but at least sort of three-quarter speed. And then there are other guys who really almost intentionally sort of slow it down. And is that just, so you think, personal preference, or does it get into the scouting of a goaltender or some kind of metrics in terms of how to shoot that shot?
I think that, I mean, everyone has their own certain preference. And in Toronto, Jason Allison, we can recall, was chided for being too slow coming in a penalty. This is like in the early days.
Right.
Okay. I think what a lot of players want to do is come in with some speed to back a goaltender up and will then slow down. Like the best players in any facet of the game are the ones that can play with speed. This is one of the things that McDavid will do. Like he'll start a rush at three-quarter speed, hit 100% speed, gap will close, he'll hit. Like those are the players that are taking it to the next level, and you see it in shootouts as well. One of the things a lot of guys want to do is back goaltenders up so you see more net. Mm-hmm. If you're coming in slow, he's still coming out to challenge. You want to back him up and see what. But there's honestly, Richard, there's no hard and fast rule for what you should do on shootouts. And to be honest with you, as far as it goes to determining a winner, and we understand like network television time is very expensive. There are flights that these teams have to catch on a Tuesday night, so we can't have marathon overtime. If you're going to have a winner and get rid of ties, you need to have a device.
Yep.
But it's a real coin flip, man.
Yeah, I thought
it really is.
I thought the Spezza move was beautiful, not to mention it was clutch. But it was interesting. I felt in that shootout, the move that he did was unlike any other player in that 11-person shootout.
Correct. Yeah. And you know what's great about it? At the end, dog face.
Yeah.
Like, there's not even a smirk, not even a smile. Just like, this is what I do.
Yeah.
Come on, boys. We're winning this thing, boy. There was no, like, little fist, but nothing. Just scores a goal, dog face, back to the bench.
Yeah.
Which leads us to this next question. He, at least in practice today, was not on one of the four lines, Jason Spezza. We went through the whole thing earlier in training camp where Mike Babcock essentially made it clear that Jason Spezza has to earn his ice time. And I think, by extension, Jeff, earned his trust. I thought he played pretty well against Philadelphia.
That was his best game as a Maple Leaf. Mm. His best game as a Maple Leaf.
Why wouldn't he be automatic at least until both Hyman and Tavares are healthy to go?
You got me. You honestly, you really got me. I mean, I thought going into the season, the idea was going to be Jason Spezza was going to be a veteran, fourth-line guy, second-unit power play, win some draws, and that was going to be his job. And you're right. It seemed right from the get-go, Mike Babcock wanted to point out to everybody, and maybe he still does now, that this is not his choice.
Right.
That this is not his player, that he does not want this player. If he were Kyle Dubas, he would not have brought in this player for this team right now. So this is a long-winded way, Jeff, of me saying, I don't have an answer for you. Because to me, specifically coming off that game Saturday against Philadelphia, Jason Spezza should be a 2-foot putt to be in this lineup against the Los Angeles Kings tomorrow. You know, three home games this week, you would think that based on the performance from Saturday, he'd be back in the lineup right away.
Yeah, again, head coaches look at things differently than the rest of us look at things. And you know, I always sort of assume that they've got more information than the rest of us. But first of all, the idea that you've somehow created this controversy around a guy who should essentially be your fourth line winger. To me, it's just, or fourth line forward. It almost smacks of boredom more than anything else.
Yeah, Brian Burke brought up this point early this season, and I think it's a salient one. Burke maintains that there's some Mike Keenan in Mike Babcock, and you guys have seen coaches in other sports and can speak to this with more authority than I can. There are some coaches that always need a conflict. They need to have a conflict on their team with someone else for them to be able to coach, bring out the best in themselves. They need conflict. They don't want smooth waters. There always has to be an issue. Do you not get the sense that that's Mike Babcock?
Yeah.
There certainly was in Detroit. Previous there was in Anaheim, wherever he went, right? There was that. There was
conflict. Was there an issue? Has there been an issue in it? I'm trying to think. The only issue I can think of with when he's coached internationally with Team Canada, and I don't know if it was his creation, but the whole idea that it was hard to find somebody to play with Sidney Crosby. And I don't know if that was a Babcock thing or just kind of a hockey world thing.
The hockey world has always maintained that because Sidney Crosby generally has had non-traditional superstar wingers and helped turn Chris Kunitz into an outstanding player. That's always been, man, there's a great Mythbusters show that's ready to be done out there about hockey, whether it's the myth of the Gordie Howe hat trick or the myth about it's tough, difficult to play with Sidney Crosby. You know, ask players. I mean, it is a luxury to play with. You have to get – the thing about playing with Sidney Crosby is you have to get used to someone who plays on his backhand more than anybody has in the history of the game. And if you're a smart hockey player, Chris Kunitz, most recently Jake Ensel, if you can do that, then playing with Crosby is a dream. Like, it really is simple. So that myth, I think, for anyone that follows the game real closely, has been exploded years ago. But internationally, I mean, he's coaching a traveling all-star team.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's almost as if, and I don't mean this in any disrespect to coaches that coach internationally, but man, when you're coaching a collection of stars like that, the team that wins is generally a team that has a couple guys that say, I don't care what the coach says. Get on my back and we're winning this thing. Generally the way it is in hockey.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're a Babcock in that situation, or if you're a coach of any all-star game, or all-star team, I should say, usually your job is to almost stay out of the way and to let them coach themselves. Like, the coach who really intercedes with that kind of talent is only undermining, I think, himself or herself. So in Babcock's situation, or I think in anybody's situation, you're almost always going to, very rarely you're going to put the hammer down. But to what Jeff was saying is interesting to me, and you do wonder if Mike Babcock needs, if part of his fuel is to focus on some player, rightly or wrongly, and try to almost go through that, you know, what he would maybe want to say to other players, almost sort of channels it through that.
So Jason Spezza becomes a proxy for someone else?
A little bit. I mean, again, I don't know. I'd have to be there every day to know how much Mike would really be on an Auston Matthews or Mitch Marner or Morgan Rielly, but there have been coaches, high profile, very successful coaches who use certain players as the proxy to send a larger message to the team.
Well, I think we had, it may have been a conversation I had with Glenn Healy about how, and I don't know if it was Keenan, but he was talking about how whatever coach it was had this thing where he would say to the player, he would pick three players at the start of the year and say, okay, here's the thing. You guys are my messengers. If I rip on you in the dressing room and I call you by your first name, I'm doing that to rip on you, to set an example for guys. So don't take it personally. If I'm really pissed, I'm using the last name. And I think Glenn was in particular, he might have been talking about Messier, in particular, how that was kind of the thing, you know,
this,
Mark,
this, this
you got to
show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's how you go around it. One of the things I don't think there's any disputing Mike Babcock about, or that Mike Babcock has reason to be concerned about, this is the Leafs' penchant for taking penalties lately. I've always thought that when you're a really skilled team, you should draw a lot of penalties. But how does a team with this much quickness take so many? I mean, they're taking reaching penalties, they're taking hooking penalties, they're taking holding penalties. They are not the biggest team, Jeff. I get that.
Nope.
But they shouldn't be hooking and slashing. They should be able to catch up to guys.
This is me throwing darts.
Yeah.
When you're a team that can't react physically, what can you do?
Fair point.
Is I mean, that just might be Occam's razor, and it's the simplest explanation. But that would be the first thing that comes to my mind, because I'm like you. This is a team that, listen, you only take penalties when you don't have the puck. And this is a team where the accent is supposed to be on puck possession, holding the puck. And, you know, we don't dump, we carry, all these types of things. You shouldn't be in a position to take a penalty. But I always ask the same thing. If you are not physical, should it surprise anybody?
How else do you slow down? Yeah.
If you can't put up speed bumps physically.
Jeff Muzzin back tomorrow. Travis Dermott back. Ideally, what should the Leafs D pairing be, let's say 40 games in?
Cody Ceci down.
That's what I think.
That to me is the big one.
Yeah.
And listen, man, Hall has done has been remarkable.
Doesn't he at least deserve
a look?
I thought
up on that top pair.
I'll tell you what, the game against the Capitals here, the way he was blocking shots, the way he was putting himself, he just seems to have a knack, Jeff, of putting himself between guys. Mm-hmm. His positioning really surprised me. And he caught your eye against a skilled team like Washington. He caught your eye.
And he has, since the beginning of the season.
Bob McGill was watching. Watching a game beside Bob McGill, there's a lot of that.
Oh, yeah.
He was impressed with what he saw from Hall. I'd let him go. I'd give him a run out, sure.
Does Morgan Riley look like the same Morgan Riley this season?
No, he does not.
And you wonder what the difference is. See, the interesting thing about the Cody Ceci phenomenon, or the Cody Ceci's presence on the Toronto Maple Leafs back end, is, you know, this performance shouldn't surprise anybody. I mean, you can't force feed this guy first lines. Mm-hmm. You can't, based on, you know, all the evidence that we saw from Ottawa. Like, this should come as a surprise to no one.
There's a track record there now.
Well, that's right. I mean, I know that, you know, they wanted to, and we talked about this last time, you know, going from Moneyball to MVP machine. Okay, here's inefficiencies, and now here you guys are baseball. You know, this, here's how you use data to improve players. I know that was the MO to try to help rehabilitate Cody Ceci. But at a certain point, you have to say to yourself, I believe, like, Morgan Riley is not Morgan Riley right now. Mm-hmm. Can we put someone with Morgan Riley so Morgan Riley can be Morgan Riley-er and get back to himself? And I think, to your point, 40 games in, I think by then you should at least have had the experiment to see what Hall looks like up there with Morgan Riley.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you could look at the metrics and the analytics. I think just the eye test on this one is pretty...
Totally.
It's pretty clear. He's overmatched as a first-line defenseman, as a first-pair defenseman. Yeah.
Now, down the roster, sure, maybe, but then you look at the price point and say...
That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Can we have a bottom-pairing defenseman with that decimal point?
Yeah. Mr. Merrick, thank you very much for doing this.
More thank tunes you, coming up soon.
I'm absolutely.
Some we'll William get, Shatner on some, the horizon here.
Get to feel the Reaper along with everybody else.
And now, it's a family show.
Jeff Merrick is host of Hockey Central, Scotiabank. He hosts everything. It's Writer's Block with Blair and Deitch on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, of Sportsnet 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
She came from Greece. She had a thirst for knowledge. She studied sculpture at St. Martin's College. That's where I caught her eye. She told me that her dad was loaded. I said, in that case, I'll have a rum and Coca-Cola. She said, fine. And in 30 seconds' time, she said, I want to live.
That's what happened to be a pleasure.
I want to do whatever common people do. I want to sleep with
folks
in
TV
I want to sleep
William
with
Shatner.
Common people common like people. You.
The New York Mets have made official that which we... Boy, that sounds Wilner-esque. The New York Mets have made official that which we knew a couple of days ago. Carlos Beltran will be their manager. An interesting hire. We talked about this a little bit last week. Look, Carlos Beltran's credentials as a player, as a smart player, as a player who, towards the end of his career, embraced analytics, are above repute. His ability to handle the media, admittedly, it's different when you're a manager than a player, but his ability to handle the media is well thought of. He was a person who was hugely popular as a player, regardless of where he meant. But I'm wondering if maybe for a team like the New York Mets, my initial reaction is this is a great fit. But the more I think about it, the more I wonder if maybe a team like the New York Mets didn't need to bring in somebody with a bit more of a track record. This didn't work, after all, with Mickey Callaway. Ed Coleman is the Mets beat reporter for WFAN. He's covered a lot of managers in his day, and he joins Richard Deitch and myself in Writer's Block. Ed, good to talk to you today. How much of a gamble is this, do you think?
Yeah, you mean Joe Girardi? Is that who you're referring to there, Jeff?
Yeah, kind of. Kind of. But you know what I mean. I think a lot of people look at this and go, eh.
Yeah, I'm with you. Listen, that was the Mets fan vote, I'll tell you that. And and boy, when Girardi, you know, finally ended up signing in Philadelphia, we heard it loud and clear, that's for sure, because Met fans and Jet fans in New York are always always loud and hurt, let's put it that way, for, you know, all the wrong reasons sometimes. But it's a gamble. I think it is a gamble. I think, you know, the safe bet was Girardi. It's a gamble for Brody Van Wagenen. You know, this, I think he needed somebody that he was comfortable with and that would collaborate with the front office and the analytical people. And I think he feels he has that in Carlos. But, you know, this is the second year of a 4-year deal for Brody. If this goes wrong, to me, it's all on him. If it went wrong with somebody, say, like Girardi, it's probably on Joe Girardi more so than it is him. So it's dangerous. It's a gamble. But he's pushed the envelope, and he has taken risks, i.e. the trade with Cano and Edwin Diaz last year, which didn't quite work out. But it was a gamble, and he took it. So he's not afraid to do that and to push the envelope. So in that sense, it wasn't surprising. In the greater sense, I think, yeah, it is a little bit surprising that Carlos Beltran is the new manager.
Ed, this will be of interest to people in this market. How did you view Marcus Stroman's tenure with the Mets, and how do you think he fit into that clubhouse?
Yeah, I guess that would be it. You know, Marcus, I honestly did not really get to know him very well because he wasn't around a lot. That's what I found. You know, I've been around this team an awful lot over the years. Some guys you can easily see and easily talk to. Others you can't. And Marcus didn't make himself particularly available to us toward the end of the year. I think he kind of remained by himself. Not that any time we needed to talk to him after a game or possibly beforehand, he was there, you know, to be talked to. But I wouldn't say that he went out of his way to ingratiate himself, let's put it that way, to the media here in New York. You know, he was fine in our dealings with him, but I can't say that I know Marcus Stroman a heck of a lot better than I knew when he first walked in the door.
Yeah, we just have a few minutes left. I did want to ask you, what's the first thing Carlos Beltran has to do? Who's the first person he has to get on board, you know, have come on board with him?
Well, probably, you know, I would imagine that Robbie Cano may be front and center in that regard. You know, Cano really, I think, helped the clubhouse last year, especially with some of the younger players. A guy like Edwin Diaz, who was having a terrible year, Cano kind of kept him afloat during that time. Jurys Familia is another Latin player who had a terrible year. Both those guys need bounce backs because they're going to be here next year. So I would say, you know, getting Robbie Cano on board probably is the best. Jacob DeGrom would be another candidate, obviously, because Jake holds great weight in that clubhouse. Everybody loves him. He's a gamer. He's a, you know, tough guy. And, you know, he's one of the leaders of the team, but, you know, probably those two guys I would, you know, signal out right away. But I don't think he'll have any problem with that because that was always one of Carlos's strengths. The players liked him. I think anybody who ever played with him always liked him as a teammate. I don't think that's the problem at all. Handling the press and the daily stuff that goes on with the media every day in New York, we'll find out. Yep. They obviously believe he can do it, but we'll find out whether he can.
Ed, great to do this, man. Thanks so much. We'll chat again. We have a little more time.
All right, guys. We'll see you.
Take care. Ed Coleman, Mets beat reporter on WFAN. Carlos Beltran, the new manager of the New York Mets. The Sacramento Kings will take on the Raptors Wednesday. That game will be on Sportsnet 590, the Fan of Sportsnet 1. Paul Jones joins us. It's Writer's Block on 590 and 360.
At Pizza Nova, there's something for every pizza lover. Create your own masterpiece with some of our vegan or vegetarian options that include our dairy-free mozzarella, our gluten-free multigrain dough, and our gourmet vegetarian toppings. Ciao, I'm Dominic Primucci, and I invite you to taste the difference.
439 for Pizza Nova.
Once a sports reporter, always a sports reporter. Sometimes a cynical and sarcastic sports reporter, but yeah, always a sports reporter. This is Writer's Block with Jeff Blair and Richard Deitch on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Nothing like a little product placement. Shai Davidi, Amy Trask, the Monday Roundtable, Docking and Madani, all ahead on Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and 360. The Raptors' next game be Wednesday. It will be on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet 1. Pre-game show will be at 7 p.m. Tip-off will be just after 7:30. The Sacramento Kings in town to take on the Raptors. The Kings... in New York last night to play the Knicks. And we're going to talk about the Raptors in a minute. But when Paul Jones, our Raptors radio analyst, joins us, got to ask him a question that I found. We've got Jonesy. Jonesy, thanks for joining Deitch and myself. Hey, I got a question I need to ask you. Off the beaten path a little bit, has nothing to do with the Raptors. We'll get there for a minute in a minute. But it has to do with RJ Barrett, who played 41 minutes last night. And somebody, and I don't know who it was, asked David Fizdale about load management with RJ Barrett, and his response was essentially, "There's no such thing when you're 19 years old or however old RJ Barrett is," and we'll get to that in a minute. Load management when it comes to the Raptors, but it kind of did raise an interesting question: how do you think how do you think the Knicks should use RJ Barrett in this rookie season? It's going to be a long year. They're not going to be very good. What constitutes proper use for RJ Barrett here? Because I think there's an interesting nugget behind that, I think.
Well, I think he's got to learn how to play, Jeff. I mean, he's a year removed from AAU.
Mm-hmm. That's mean, right, yeah.
He played a year at Duke, I don't know, 35 games or something, and that'll be done by Christmas time or January, and he's got to learn how to play the man's game. It's the sixth game of the year. Like, you can't be worried about wearing him out and stuff. He just laced the shoes up for the first little while.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I understand, and some people have taken load management to just mean rest. It doesn't. It means, and you talked to Alex McKechnie about it, it means equally managing the load, the workload on somebody. So there would be times that Kawhi Leonard wasn't playing in the game, but that doesn't mean he hasn't worked out to a point where, he's put a load on his body.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's time to rest. And that time to rest means he doesn't play in the game. So, I mean, it is a viable concept. It is something that you worry about or you have to look at, but it's also something you look at around a guy who's coming back from an injury, a team that has expectations for a championship. I mean, RJ Barrett's 19 years old. He's 2 years removed from playing three games in one day as a high schooler, playing 32 minutes each time.
Right.
So it's Fizdale referenced, Latrell Sprewell playing 42 minutes
That's
a game.
That's right.
It's also a different time in the NBA. I mean, we talked about it at down at practice today. People were talking with Fred about it, and part of rest and managing yourself is what you do on the off days,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, are you, back in the day on a schedule like this where the Raptors had, they had games, three games last week, there were also practices in between where you were getting taped and you were going full speed working on stuff that you had to work on. That doesn't happen anymore. Like, we walked in to the end of practice today when they let us in, and there were eight guys on the second unit, non-starters, working at stuff under the watchful eye of Nurse and the coaches. And then at another basket, there was Pascal with a little one-on-one drill with two coaches. And then Ibaka had two coaches at the other end working on his mid-range, his pick and roll, and his one-on-one game. So it's how you, you know, it's how you look after the workload when they're not playing in games. That's just as important too. So for RJ Barrett, he's got to learn to play the man's game, and playing 40, 41 minutes in game six of his NBA career, I don't think there's any concern about, you know, managing the load on the kid and wearing him out. And yeah, they were down 20, but those are valuable minutes. There's no such thing when you're learning the game and or when you're a bench guy going in, there's no such thing as, well, you know, people call it garbage time. There's no such thing as garbage time when you're the 13th man or when you're RJ Barrett and you're learning to play the game. You're getting reps, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Jonesy, you want to know why I like RJ Barrett paying all these minutes? Because it's going to prepare him for the 2022-23 season when he's playing here in Toronto. So
There you go.
I'm happy.
Alongside Giannis, right?
Yeah, and Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. So I'm very happy with all those guys playing. What did you take away?
Why don't you throw Nikhil Alexander Walker in here there too? Because he's a keeper too.
I will, but I need to see the salary cap for that year. I'll get back to you on that. Yeah. And Kyle Lowry, of course, who never ages. What did you take away from the Bucks game?
I think their offense dictated the fact that they couldn't make shots, dictated some of what happened on defense because it wasn't all there all the time. And they just missed some shots. I mean, you know, if your name wasn't Lowry or Matt Thomas, you made as many shots as Blair did in that first quarter.
No.
Like that's
seems like,
you know,
a shot at Blair.
I shouldn't say that. Maybe Blair could have closed his eyes and done a Meadowlark hook shot from center and put it in. But
no,
they had a tough night shooting the ball, Richard, and yet they were still in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I tweeted it out in the middle of the fourth quarter. By the way, their biggest comeback all time in Raptor history is 25. And if they come back from this, it's 26. And they had it down to four with the ball.
Mm.
And they still only shot 40%. And that would have been the third time this year in six games that Milwaukee let go a lead of double figures. They let go a 19-point lead at Boston, a 21-point lead at Miami. So I take it that, Richard, that these guys still have that huge chip on their shoulder. Nobody's picking us, and we're going to come out here and battle because we are the defending champions, and we don't care who's here or who's not. You know, that nebulous word that we can't define, culture. Well, Toronto has a culture right now, and that's how they play, and that's the way they do things. And Nick Nurse is not going to just dole out minutes to bench guys because he needs to save some minutes on the other guys. He wants to win right now. He wants to establish something. And I think Kyle and Fred are 1-2 as we talk about load management in minutes played right now because they're trying to win.
Mm. You know, the other thing too, and this is no earth-shattering observation because I know for a fact that we talked about it when we had you on before the Raptors' first game and we were looking around the East. But, Jonesy, that's not the same team without Malcolm Brogdon. I'm sorry, they're not. Without a healthy Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah, no, I hear you, Jeff.
There's not as much flow to them as when they had Brogdon.
They've lost some playmaking. They have. That's what he gave them. And, I mean, Wesley Matthews and Kyle Korver will make up for the three-point shooting, mm-hmm. but Brogdon took the ball to the basket, and he was a pretty good playmaker. And you know, they've lost some of that. And we'll see. Look, Giannis made a jump shot, a three the other night, a critical three. And I thought, okay, if he's going to start making those, then the rest of the NBA is in trouble. Mm-hmm. But until he can start making them consistently, I think you play him the same way. And I thought, for the most part, the Raptors did a pretty good job. You know, like he is a good player. It's not like you're going to stop him, but I just thought they did a pretty good job, and they did a good job shooting the ball in the second half. Kyle was tremendous in the third quarter. And like I said, if Marc Gasol dunks that thing instead of trying to lay it in, it's a two-point game with, you know, 3-4 minutes to go.
Jonesy, how alarming are the number of turnovers? It is early in the season. I understand we can read too much into early season stats, but basically 4 more a game than last season. Is that a sign? I'm not going to say that Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet are wearing down at all, but I'm just wondering if maybe it isn't a sign that somebody else has to do some of the ball handling in this team.
You know what, Jeff? I think it's Pascal Siakam learning defenses.
Okay.
Where people are coming at him from. I think it's kind of guys adjusting and being in control of their bodies. There have been a lot of offensive fouls, JB.
Mm-hmm.
Like the one night in Boston, 10 of the turnovers were from offensive fouls.
Fair. Yep.
So I'm not as worried about that as it looks. It's a matter of kind of, you know, adjusting to calls and Pascal reading where they're coming at him. And he's been guilty of the fouls too. I mean, he's fouled out at least in 2 games, in the Boston game and or the New Orleans game and the Milwaukee game. He had 5 in Boston. Nick had the fabulous line: the referees allowed him to rest in the first half. I mean, you know, the turnovers are coming from fouls too, offensive fouls, and they just have to be aware. It's a group learning to play together, knowing that they don't have that guy coming in anymore.
Jonesy, Kings and Pelicans coming up at home, and then a mega stretch on the road. Lakers, Clippers, Blazers, Mavs. Jeff and I were talking about this prior to you coming on. What do you aim for in that road trip? I mean, 1-3, are you happy given the quality of the team? 2-2, you celebrate and come back. What's realistic, you think?
Well, they haven't won on the road yet this year. So, they have been traditionally the last 5 or 6 years a very good road team, Richard. So, I mean, you look at it, you know, if you get New Orleans, you split one of the back-to-backs, and then Portland and Dallas are really tough. Dallas is playing really well right now. Portland's always a tough place to play. You know, you're going in there as, you know, the 4th game, you will have been away from home for almost a week. Hey, if you come home 3-2, you'll take that. Mm. I think you will. But they've been a pretty good road team, and don't be surprised if it doesn't go well, because like I said, other than New Orleans, the Lakers, the Clippers, Portland and Dallas, especially the way Dallas is playing right now, they are good teams. And, you know, the formula for having a good record is, you know, win 80% of your home games and hang around 500 on the road. Well, the Raptors have had, you know, 20, 21, 22 road wins the last few years. If they can accomplish that again this year and hang on to what they're doing at home, they're going to be fine.
Jonesy, Patrick McCaw has a knee injury. He's going to be out indefinitely, according to the team. We just talked about there's not a surplus of depth at the guard position in this team necessarily. And I know there's, you know, Norm Powell can do some of the ball handling. We already talked about Pascal Siakam perhaps being asked to do more of it. If McCaw is out for a while, though, is this something that do you think Masai Ujiri may want to address?
Well, I mean, if he is, because he gives them good stuff offensively. You know, he's worked on his 3-point shooting. He cuts away from the ball extremely well. He's on the other end, he's a very good on the ball defender in particular. And he makes those hustle plays. He's on loose balls and those kinds of things. It might just be time for one of those other guys, particularly a Stanley Johnson or a Rondae Hollis-Jefferson to earn some of Nick Nurse's trust.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Nick talked about that. On Saturday, he said with Giannis, there may be a Stanley Johnson or a Rondae Hollis-Jefferson sighting, and we didn't see it. Those guys need to, you know, as I said earlier, fall into the culture. This is the way we do things in Toronto. We've had success the last 7 years by making the playoffs and only being stopped by one guy, basically LeBron James. He was out of the way. We won the whole thing. We found some things that work. This is how we do it now. And you're coming in here on your, you know, your third, your second, your third, your fourth team, whatever. Fall in line here. You want to play? This is what you need to do. And maybe it's time for those guys to, you know, do whatever it takes for them to get on the floor, because they're both strong physical defenders that can help this team. You know, maybe not in the same way that Patrick McCaw does, but they can sure offer help. And you know, they need to be a part of it. They need to earn the coach's trust, because Nick's not just giving out those minutes indiscriminately. Mm.
Jonesy, we're going to let you scoot. As always, it was great of you to join us. Thank you.
All right, my pleasure, guys.
Thanks, Take care. Paul Jones, our Raptors radio analyst on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You can hear Paul and Eric on Wednesday as the Sacramento Kings take on the Raptors. After that, the Raptors go on the road for five games. The game will be Wednesday on Sportsnet 590, Sportsnet 1. Pregame at 7, tip-off just after 7:30 on 590 and Sportsnet 1. Smith and Jones will call on the radio. Devlin Routens, Faye Grange, and Daniel Michaud with the TV presentation of said game. The Jays made a trade to address their starting pitching. Well, they hope will address some of the gaps they have in starting pitching. Getting Chase Anderson from the Milwaukee Brewers today seems to be a low-risk, medium-reward move more than anything else. Shai Davidi's our MLB insider at Sportsnet. Shai Davidi joins us. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, the Monday Roundtable will assemble at 4 o'clock. Ashley Docking, co-host of Leadoff with Ashley Ziggy and Scotty Mack, and Arash Madani, reporter with Sportsnet. Deitch is busy singing Brandy right now.
Somewhere Brad Fay is singing along with me.
This does classify as a guilty pleasure, I must
admit. Yeah, this fits a little bit more into what we were going for.
I imagine you driving down this street with your window open.
Open streets of Long Island.
Screaming out this song.
Cape Cod.
I can imagine it. Anyhow.
What's the best movie involving a sailor? Jaws?
What?
It's got to be Jaws.
No.
What would it be?
Best movie involving a sailor.
I consider Robert Shaw a sailor in Jaws. Do you? Quint?
The best movie involving a sailor is Das Boot. And it has sailors, plural.
I've seen Das Boot, and it was an excellent film. I would not rank it ahead of Jaws, though. Are you talking about the German Das Boot or the American, the anglicized version?
No, the German Das Boot with subtitles.
Listen, a very good film. Jaws is an all-time film.
Overrated.
Oh, come on, Blair.
How could you say Jaws? The only way Jaws could be more overrated is if Will Ferrell was in it.
You ever see Captain Phillips with Tom Hanks?
Overrated, yes.
All right. You're a tough movie grader, Blair. Yeah. What is your favorite movie?
That doesn't matter. The guy who was the pirate in that movie, in Captain Phillips?
Yeah.
Raptors players used to say that Lou Williams looked like him.
He does look a little like him. Yeah, put it this way. Lou Williams was the captain last night. He was training threes.
Bring in Shai Davidi, our MLB insider in Sportsnet, who's been listening with no apparent interest at all to our discussion.
Shai will agree with me on Jaws as well. Shai?
You know what? This may be heresy, but I haven't seen Jaws.
No, that's Shai. Not heresy.
Come on, Shai.
No, that's not heresy. It speaks to your age, and no, that's not heresy at all. I've seen it once. It's not, you know, the mechanical shark was a really big deal back in the day. Now they just, you know, have some sort of graphic
phenomenal. Shai, seriously, watch it in the next couple of weeks. Get back to me. Thank me.
No, don't bother.
Now I'm intrigued enough because I just want to wade into this debate with a point of knowledge.
You need to watch something uplifting. Das Boot is very uplifting.
You know, we're speaking about, you know, water movies. Really mm-hmm. underrated. I'm a big Wes Anderson guy. Life Aquatic of Steve Zissou.
Yeah. It's good.
It's actually it is not bad. I thought you were going to go with Aquaman or what's that horrible one? Waterworld. which might be one of the worst movies
of
all time.
Yeah, that's an all-time worst film.
Might be one of the worst movies of all time. So Chase Anderson, tell me about him. Fifth starter? Well, fourth starter?
I mean, in this rotation right now.
He could be opening day starter. Right. Yes. Oh, that's true.
But it's a starting point for the Blue Jays. And I think what the number one overriding and obvious need for them has been some stability and innings for their starting rotation. And these are innings and stability for the starting rotation. Mm-hmm. And if he's your four or he's your five, then this starting rotation is in much better shape than it was last year. And look, I mean, they had one guy that went wire to wire last year in Trent Thornton. And this is a guy who's been durable over the past five seasons, at least 25 starts each of those seasons, at least 139 innings, up to 150-something inning. He's made 30 starts multiple times. This is something they don't have, and the acquisition cost is extremely low. It's a fringy double-A prospect, Chad Spanberger, who came over from the Rockies for Sang-Won-Oh. And if this is the beginning point, and my understanding that this is just the start, I'm told that this does not impact any of their other plans. This doesn't preclude them from doing other bigger things. And so this is it's a good starting point for a team that was desperate for starting pitching.
Shai, usually when transactions like this happen, I try to think of the team other than the one in the market that I'm in. So I think about Milwaukee, and what comes to mind is, why did Milwaukee give up on him? Is it salary? Is it something else? What is your interpretation?
Yeah, I mean, this is financial from their end. And, you know, they've got some rejigging to do. They've got to figure out what they want to do to ensure that they're still a club that's playing for, you know, they won the wild card this year or got to the wild card game this year, and they want to proceed from there and get back atop the NL Central. So for them, the financial flexibility is much more important because they don't have the resources that a team like the Blue Jays does. And the Blue Jays, look, I mean, this is one of those times where they're using their financial muscle, right? They've got the ability to take on some payroll. You know, $8.5 million for next year, potentially an option for $9.5 million the year after that. This is something that fits easily into their budget. They've got virtually no commitments on the books beyond Randall Grichuk, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., and the remaining money they owe to Troy Tulowitzki. So, you know, they were able to take someone keep someone from getting onto the open market. You know, the Brewers were expected to not pick up that option. And there was a minimal acquisition cost to get it done.
Shai, early days of free agency, obviously guys have just filed. We haven't, there haven't been any offers extended, at least not officially, formally. I don't know, guys, there may have been some back channels offered. Anything surprise you so far at all about who may have filed or who hasn't filed?
Not yet. I'm going to be curious to see which of the free agents end up getting qualifying offers, how many of them, whether that plays as expected. You know, the Aroldis Chapman settling pretty quickly. Some people may have been surprised, but, you know, he had said all along that he wanted to stay in New York, and he was certainly true to his word there. I think there was some thought that maybe Strasburg might not opt out, or they might have a deal done with the Nationals ahead of time. So I think those are some, I don't know if surprise qualifies, but you know, those are some of the things, some of the discussions on the bigger points. I think where we go from here is going to be interesting. Like, are more teams trying to win next year? Are more teams urgently trying to win next year? Does that change the free agent market? You know, I think we'll get a better read on that next week at the GM meetings once those get going. And to me, that's sort of a bigger game-wide issue. Because if you have more teams that are motivated, then you have a much more active free agency and a much more interesting offseason. Mm.
Shai, I saw on Sportsnet's website in a list of free agents or potential free agents, the name is Zach Wheeler. And one of the teams that was on the list of, you know, could be interested or realistic places was Toronto. And I wonder what you think of that. Obviously, you know, the Mets may have interest in retaining his services. 11-8 last year, I looked at his numbers, 3.96, nearly 200 innings pitched. 1.26 ERA. That's going to be a pricey pitcher, but he's also 29 years old. And I wonder if that's the kind of pitcher where if you're finally going to invest, you invest in someone like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's super interesting, and obviously he's had talent for years and years. But I don't see him as someone that the Blue Jays would be interested in or going all out for because, one, his injury history, he's been very spotty over his career in terms of durability. And I think if you're going to splurge on the free agent market, you want to splurge on the guy that's been durable as opposed to rolling the dice on the guy that wasn't. The other factor there is that, you know, he's going to be qualified. And so you're going to have to surrender a draft pick to sign him. And I still think at this point the Blue Jays don't want to give up draft pick at this point of their build. I would expect that, you know, next offseason is the point where they're starting to really look at signing a qualified free agent and being willing to sacrifice the pick. But at this point, I think it's at least my sense of what their view on it would be is that their feeling would be too early to give up on that yet. So I don't think this winter we see them signing qualified free agent. But I do think there's some opportunities for them in the market. You know, someone just maybe a tier down from the Zach Wheeler, someone like a Jake Odorizzi. I think that's probably going to be more in their wheelhouse. And I would be surprised if the Twins qualified him. I haven't seen yet today whether they have or they haven't.
Jays made a little bit of news in the spring training front today, announcing that the TD Bank has brought naming rights to the spring training complex. I mean, the spring training has turned into a bit of a cash cow for a lot of major league teams. I mean, it used to be, it was just a place where guys went to get ready. Now, in point of fact, for some teams, it's a revenue generator. I mean, take a look at the New York Yankees. And Shai, I'm wondering, any idea, and this might be a bit of a reach here, but is there any idea that this may pretend or may hint that there may be something happening with naming rights at the Rogers Center? Because that's something that's been talked about in the past, obviously. It is a form of revenue. There's not much doubt about that. And I'm wondering if maybe this isn't sort of something to lay the groundwork for any future announcement or future move in that regard.
I mean, perhaps. And I thought about that, and I haven't had a chance to dig into that just yet today with some of the other stuff that's been happening. But this is just a guess for me here, but I would think that naming rights would probably coincide with any eventual refurbishment of the dome.
Okay.
And until that happens, when you have the new facility at that point or the new-ish facility or renewed facility, and you've got something much more appealing to sell to a sponsor, I think that would be the time to sell the naming rights. Now you might be sort of you're selling it on a lower ebb, and you know, in theory, I would think the Blue Jays would want to have the team timed with the updated of the stadium, or that the team that's already competitive at that point. So you'd be in a much better situation to try and sell the naming rights at that point in time.
Good stuff, Shai. Thank you for doing this.
You got it, fellas. Take care.
Shai Davidi, our MLB insider with Sportsnet. Again, the Jays acquiring Chase Anderson from the Milwaukee Brewers for Chad Spanberger, who was their number 30th ranked prospect and really had very little chance of ever appearing in the majors. So it is a high reward, extremely low risk offer. And Travis McKenzie, thank you for just retweeting that the Twins are giving Jake Odorizzi a qualifying offer, which makes me think it would be makes me think you could probably take Jake Odorizzi off the Jays list.
Yeah,
but that is the Shai's right. That's the type of player or the type of pitcher I think you'll see the Jays going after. And what I find fascinating about the Steven Strasburg situation, and our friends at MLB Network did a great job breaking this down. Scott Boras basically controls the market this winter once again. He's got Hyunjin Ryu as a free agent. He has Steven Strasburg as a free agent. He's got Garrett Cole as a free agent. He's got Anthony Rendon as a free agent.
Wow, I was just going to ask you that.
And let me just check on Garrett Cole before I say that. But the point is by taking Steven Strasburg out on the market, even if he does re-sign with the Nationals, which I think he probably will. I think this is a way of getting, I mean, he left 4 years and $100 million on the table. I think you'll probably end up seeing Steven Strasburg end up signing a 6-year contract for $145 or $150 million or something like that, or $170 million. as a result of this. But by taking him out on the market, he creates more of a dynamic that might allow Hyunjin Ryu to get more money. You know, Gerrit Cole's going to get what he's going to get. We know right now he's probably going to get $250 million. That's said and done. But maybe this Steven Strasburg on the market, maybe it can be used to leverage Dallas Keuchel. Maybe you can play off teams against each other. But I still think that Steven Strasburg, everything we're led to believe about Steven Strasburg is that he was very comfortable in D.C. He is a guy who has indicated in the past that he likes stability. He likes familiarity. And it wouldn't surprise me at all to see him re-sign there. But Anthony Rendon he's gone. He's gonna break the bank. I don't think there's any way the Nationals bring in both of those guys. And you know what you may see the Nationals do. You may see the Nationals aim down a little bit if they lose Rendon. I can see the Nationals being a player for Josh Donaldson, bringing in somebody like that who can fill in at third base right away.
Yeah, the only thing I would sort of add to Strasburg, and this was something that was reported on during the series, and I think it is a little bit of an indicator. He's a California guy, Jeff, who moved his family to the D.C. area. His kids are now in school there. His wife talked about being comfortable in D.C. Unless something crazy happens with the money, that strikes me that they're going to figure out a way to make that work. But I think you're right. Rendon is gone. I just don't know how they could afford both guys.
No, I don't think they can. The guy that intrigues me is Madison Bumgarner, and I threw this out here on Sportsnet Thoughts. Yeah, and I mean it's not an original thought. It was talked about last year. I know when the Houston Astros were in town talking to some Astros people, but they think that Madison Bumgarner is very much a fallback for the Astros if they don't get Gerrit Cole. And if you look at Madison Bumgarner, 30 years old, 31 years old, looking for a late career renaissance, wants to win a World Series. Boom. You're almost talking Justin Verlander.
So annoying, but it fits.
It really does fit. And Madison Bumgarner is one of those guys. I mean, Madison Bumgarner wants to win again. He'll pitch in any market. I also think Madison Bumgarner is a guy that the Yankees will go after for that reason. I think he's basically impervious, you know, and you can drop him down in any market, in any mound, in any game, at any time of the season. And he's going to be good, but
yeah. Again, I think he can handle anything, Madison Bumgarner. But lifestyle wise, Houston does fit his POV far more than New York.
He's a Southern boy,
Southern guy, kind of wants like space, grass, green. I don't think he's done, Jeff. That's a guy.
No, I'm
if
with
the money
you.
Was there. I would roll the dice.
Oh, I would too, 100%. I just think if anything, maybe Madison Bumgarner's gotten bored.
Yeah.
In San Francisco the past couple of years. A reminder that your team could be playing. I'm going to read this. I'm sorry. Your team could be playing in a game called by Joe Bone and Jim Ralph live on Sportsnet 590. The Fan for the first annual Champions of Rec League Cup brought to you by the Beer Store. All the names are in, right, Travis? All the teams are in. Everything's said and done. Now what you got to do is submit your votes for the remaining teams at sportsnet.ca/590. This contest is open to Ontario residents today. I'm doing this because there's no tricky names. There's no embarrassing team names. There's no double entendres involved. There's nothing like that. Dice, you handled that well last
week.
Thank you. I turtled. I admit I turtled. But I can do this now because I don't have to worry about names. So that's perfect. Amy Trask is our NFL analyst. Well, she's our NFL insider. She's technically an analyst with CBS Sports. Lamar Jackson pretty much had his way with New England yesterday.
That was unbelievably good.
So the question is, does that win say more about Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens or the New England Patriots? Some were talking about the Patriots as having one of the best defenses in NFL history. Statistically, that appeared to hold up until yesterday, last night. We'll talk to Amy Trask about it. It's Writer's Block with Blair and Deitch on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, we're just a few minutes away from our Monday roundtable. Ashley Dawkins, co-host of Lead Off with Ashley Ziggy and Scotty Mack, joins us, as will Arash Madani, fresh off his World Series assignment. Mr. Deitch singing Last Train to Clarksville.
Have you enjoyed my choices?
I have.
When does your choice come? Tomorrow?
I'll probably save mine for the end. Tomorrow's choice will be
Travis
Travis McKenzie with his guilty pleasures. Oh, yes. It's Travis McKenzie. Jen on Wednesday. I'll probably do it Thursday.
Travis is like 30 years old. What's he going to
do? It's going to be nothing but
Cold. Toxic by like Britney Spears or something?
No, it's going to be nothing but Coldplay. Be nothing but Coldplay.
Ooh, Travis said Ashley Simpson. I believe he said it on air.
No,
wow. There's like one Ashley Simpson song I think that can even be chosen.
Ravens beat the Patriots 37-20 last night. Lamar Jackson had a pretty good game, didn't he? We'll bring in Amy Trask, our NFL insider, NFL analyst with CBS Sports. Amy, thanks for joining Deitch and myself. So let's see, 163 yards passing. I was just going to rattle off Lamar Jackson's numbers, but the Patriots had given up 4 touchdowns going into this game. He got 3 of them, 2 by throwing. Sorry, 1 by throwing, 2 by running. That's a pretty good performance, isn't it?
Well, I was going to say thank you very much for having me, but I was also going to say, how did I not know you men were singing on the show before I joined you? Although I do have a village of people who are committed to not letting me ever sing in public. the game, really, they would have an intervention with me if I tried to sing in public. It was a fascinating game, and someone early in my career said to me, when two really, really good teams play one another, why is the focus always on, or for the most part on, why did this team lose as opposed to, wow, look at the way this team won? So dig into those statistics all you want, because Baltimore, that was a heck of a performance. And, Bill Belichick normally goes into a game and says, I'm going to take away your primary threat. And they weren't able to do that last night.
Amy, to answer your question, it's because negative sells more than positive. It's not my choice, but that is almost humanity's choice. So that's the reason why we focus on why someone lost than why someone won.
Please. That was not, absolutely not a comment or a criticism about you guys. It was simply a world observation. And the gentleman who shared that with me shared it with me over 30 years ago. So this is, you're absolutely right. People want to focus on why someone lost as opposed to, wow, these were two really good teams and one of them won.
Right. And that person who shared it with you was Mikhail Gorbachev, leader of the Soviet Union. All right. Anyway, Amy, how did you, this will be the worst segue of all time, but I'm doing it anyway. How did you view the Jermaine Whitehead story via the prism of the Cleveland Browns executives, either waking up or seeing later on a Sunday, all right, we have a player who's basically going off on social media and isn't stopping anytime soon?
I looked at it from all perspectives, sad for the player, and people will jump all over me when I say this, because I just said it. I feel badly for the player. Look, did he do the right thing? Of course not. Did he put the organization in a tough position? Absolutely. Should he have refrained from doing that? Of course. But, kids today, if you will, and players, for some reason I keep getting, I don't know that I'm getting older, but they keep getting younger or something like that.
I think Matthew McConaughey said that.
Because I'll be
in Dazed and Confused.
The stone cold truth is I am getting older. So players coming into the league come in at the same age, but there's a bigger and bigger gap. And these, they were raised with social media, and I'm not excusing it, and I'm not suggesting it was right. And, as Herm Edwards would say, don't hit send. But I do feel badly because he acted in a manner that is not unusual for many people of a certain age group. He shared his feelings or inappropriate statements shared inappropriately for someone in the public eye, but he then paid the ultimate price. Do I fault the Browns for letting him go? No, I understand from a business perspective what the issue is. It's just a sad story.
Mm. Amy, getting back to the Ravens and Patriots game, we talked about obviously Lamar Jackson and the things he did well. Does this win say more about him and the Ravens, or does it say more about the Patriots? And again, I understand that's working off your narrative about we're always looking for the negative, but I'm trying to flip it a bit. What does it say about the Ravens?
It's a phenomenal question. I think it says something about both teams. Look, no, it is very, I was going to say no team is invincible. And certainly there are teams that can go undefeated and it can happen. And we've seen it happen on all of those things. But as a general rule, teams aren't invincible. And we saw a team find a way to defeat New England. Now I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that had that game been in New England, it may well have been a different outcome. And I don't mean in any way to take anything away from the Ravens. They played a tremendous game, and Lamar Jackson is just sensational, whether he's throwing or running or acting as a leader of that organization, that team. You know, we saw him on the sideline a couple weeks ago in Seattle when his coach said, "Do you want to go for it?" And he said, "Hell yeah, coach, I want to go for it." That's the mentality of the Ravens right now, and it's exciting.
One thing, Jeff, I'm sorry. One thing with Lamar Jackson, first or second year quarterback to win against New England since 2013. First or second year quarterback to win against New England since 2013. Did you want to ask
me
something? I'm sorry. Well, Amy, the one thing that I think this win does is, and you know, agree with me or not agree with me, but I think the win is so big that you can say that is, for so long, the narrative in the AFC has been, it's going to be the Chiefs and the Patriots at a certain point. Will it be at Arrowhead? Will it be at Foxborough? But that's essentially going to be your AFC Super Bowl team. And I feel like yesterday the Ravens threw that entire narrative up in the air now. And again, you're probably right. I don't know if they could duplicate that on the road. But I now look at the AFC, and I don't think it's – I now include them as one of my teams that – if the road sort of is good in the postseason, they could do it.
Absolutely. And by the way, being the contrarian that I am, I never buy into narratives like that at the beginning of the season. I push back on them hard because the fact is that any team, every team is one injury, two injuries away from an entirely inverted season. Now, look, we saw that Patrick Mahomes was hurt, and the Chiefs found a way to win yesterday against a very good Minnesota team. And they may survive that injury, if you will, in terms of winning enough while Mahomes is out to keep things going. But I just think narratives are overstated. Look, the league is built, and this is not unintentional, it's absolutely intentional on the part of league executives and most owners, on the theory of parity, that on any given Sunday, your team can win. So, yes, you're absolutely right. The narrative has been New England and Kansas City. I've just never bought into that as what is ultimately going to happen. We don't know yet, and that's a lot of fun. And by the way, talking about Baltimore going on the road and doing things in the postseason makes this girl very, very unhappy because they came into Oakland one year and knocked us out of the playoffs. So, yes, teams can do that on the road. New England did it to Kansas City last year.
Ms. Trask, we appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much.
And by the way, I just want to tell you that was the game where Tony Siragusa flopped on Rich Gannon, and I'm still angry about it.
That would hurt, having Tony Siragusa flop on anybody.
Right.
Take care, Amy.
Thank you.
See you, Amy.
Amy Trask, NFL analyst with CBS Sports, our NFL insider. It is Monday. That means the roundtable assembles. It'll be Arash Madani of Sportsnet, Ashley Dawkins, co-host of Lead Off with Ashley Ziggy and Scotty Mack. We'll talk about the NFL, take a deeper dive into that game last night, talk about the Leafs. We'll start off with our discussion on the Raptors losing to Milwaukee. Do we read anything into that early season loss to the team that they beat in the playoffs last year? The Monday Roundtable's next. It's Writer's Block with Blair and Deitch on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360.
If job requirements included having triggered a tantrum by a pompous, angry, multi-million-dollar athlete, they'd be unbelievably overqualified for the job. This is Writer's Block with Jeff Blair and Richard Deitch on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Oh, I didn't know about this. We got a milkshake bet coming. It's Writer's Block, the Monday Roundtable, Docking, Madani, Blair, and Deitch. Mr. Deitch and Mr. Medani having a little...
Yeah, we had I mean, last year...
Tell us about the milkshake bet.
Yeah, so, last year, I was very lucky, very new to the station, and proclaimed that the Raptors would win. Was it 20 out of the first 25?
Yeah.
Okay, and they were either... Were they 21-4? Something like that.
Something like that.
The point is, like, I think I won the bet or came close enough. You, of course, magnanimously on the air, said, Arash and I made a bet. And yeah. Arash and I made a bet. And so I won the bet. And he, you know, graciously and magnanimously said that he would buy milkshakes, I think for my family and not just me, maybe.
Wow.
Whatever. Because that wasn't...
Wow. Like he's escalated. This
That wasn't the initial bet.
And the rest of Sportsnet.
Ashley, don't forget it was the car that he was going to buy them to take them to get the milkshake.
Yeah, but here's the punchline to the story. I haven't seen anything.
Yes.
Wow.
Since Kawhi, both Kawhi, you and Kawhi have left town, basically, when it comes to this bet.
You've been a traveling... Well, you are a traveling man, but...
And it was a busy October.
It was a busy October. You got to see lots of good stuff.
The Washington Nationals.
Your friendship with Anthony Rendon.
Yeah.
Which is...
Who did not go to the White House.
Who did not go to the White House.
Really?
Breaking news.
Yeah.
These are the individuals who have now become everybody's favorite Washington Nationals. Anthony Rendon, Javi Guerra, Joe Ross, Wander Suero, Wilmer Defoe, Michael Taylor, Victor Robles, and Sean Doolittle were not on the official attendance list for today's ceremony at the White House. So there you go. That's the official attendance list. Given the way things are done at that White House, who knows? They could be in there. They could be staying overnight because keeping track of records is not something that that the Trumpolini does all that well. But anyhow, there you go. Those are apparently the Washington Nationals who didn't make the trip. We'll talk about that in a minute. I want to start today's roundtable, though, by talking about the Raptors because it's a topic near and dear to hearts. I know Ashley Docking, Rash, myself, Richard. Richard disagrees with me a little bit because I wonder whether or not this may not be kind of a fundamentally boring season for the Raptors because I'm just looking ahead to the playoffs. But we saw them play Milwaukee on the weekend. They lost early season. I get that. But any time this team plays Milwaukee, it's going to be viewed as a measuring stick. I think, Ashley, we can safely say that. Did you take anything away from that game?
Yeah, don't dig yourself into a first-half hole and then expect to get back into the game, well, which they did. But when you have someone like Giannis on the other side who takes it exceptionally personally that mm-hmm. they eliminated them in the postseason. So whether or not you want to say that an early-season loss to Milwaukee is a measuring stick, that's up to you. The Raptors might not even see it that way, but the Bucks do. And for a team that I suspect is not going to be circled in the calendar when any other team comes to town, those grudge matches are probably going to be few and far between, mm-hmm. maybe Philadelphia as well. So you have to take a team like Milwaukee exceptionally seriously when you're going to play them. Not that they take teams lightly, but especially with the fire that Milwaukee's going to mm-hmm. come at you with.
What did you think, Mr. Medani?
I think back to what Sparky Anderson said about a baseball season. He said, through 40 games, just make sure you're 20-20 and then kind of wake me up and let's go from there.
That's actually not bad. Not a bad philosophy.
The first Saturday of November in a basketball season doesn't really get...
Doesn't get the juices flowing.
The juices flowing. And it was just, to me, it was one of those games that until the fourth quarter, there was just a lot of walking and talking.
But there are some things that, you know, some differences about this team. Obviously, they don't have Kawhi, but, they've used the same starting lineup for six games. They never did that last year. They haven't done that since 2017. They are turning the ball over an awful lot. Richard, as our friend Paul Jones pointed out, a lot of that is offensive fouls, which count as turnovers. And now Patrick McCaw's gone down indefinitely with a knee injury. I don't know if we've seen a thinner Raptors team than the one we're looking at right now because they literally don't have anybody. I think you'd say you'd be comfortable handling the ball other than Fred or Kyle on a steady basis anyhow.
Richard. Yeah, I find this team more interesting than Blair, I think, because the search for ultimately what they are to me is pretty interesting. And I think the year could go a lot of different ways.
I agree with that.
Blair points out, it's not sustainable, this current rotation. It just isn't. Like your key player behind Pascal is in his early 30s as a point guard. As great as Kyle is and as much as he wants to play, it's just you can't have a guy play that long. He's going to be dead for the playoffs and ultimately then what are you playing for?
That's the plan either.
I don't think so. But
I think it's a lot of figuring out what roles are going to
be. But this is why I find this year interesting, is that Masai and his group brought in some people that they thought would make them, first and foremost, very long and very defensive-oriented, right? That was sort of going to be the identity of this team, was going to be defense first and then sort of figure it out. And Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and Stanley Johnson and Patrick McCaw were all part of that, I feel like, length defense-oriented first. Well, Nick Nurse clearly doesn't, at least at this point, doesn't trust enough guys to play. So what I find interesting is, like, what are these guys right now? The Milwaukee game, I feel like, was, at least for me, in terms of sort of an evaluation, twofold. On the one hand, I think Milwaukee is better than them, top to bottom. I thought that heading into the season, and nothing I saw changed my mind in that game. But the way the game was played and just sort of how it sort of turned out was not like anything I expected. So then it sort of even sort of makes me reevaluate, okay, maybe my expectations of the Raptors are a little low, because I thought that comeback was fantastic. And had Marc Gasol made a couple of what I think are pretty, he will usually make those shots.
Sure.
Well, then it's a tie game, and Milwaukee is like, we just blew a gigantic lead. We're at home. It would have been a really, I think maybe the Bucks still would have won. I would have loved to have seen that game tied, because it would have early in the season told me a lot about Milwaukee, because I'm with Blair. Like, I think Malcolm Brogdon is one of the most underrated players in the NBA, and I think they're a different, they're still a very good team, but they're a different group than what I saw in when we were all sort of covering the Eastern Conference Finals.
It's interesting to think about the ways that this team can go, and I'm sorry, Jeff, I love to agree with you, but I can't in this way. Like, are they buyers? Are they sellers? Are they contenders? Are they fringe? Every team is one injury away from being way worse than you expected them to, but the Raptors' depth is something that we've always applauded. The bench mob. You don't get a name as a group unless you're something that's dangerous.
But they don't have that anymore.
No, that's what I'm saying, though. That's one of the questions as well. It's who is it going to be? Because Serge Ibaka, to me, he deserves so much more credit than he's gotten for the role that he took on once Marc Gasol came into the mix.
Definitely.
It's not easy for anyone in any position when you're having a hell of a year to have someone come in and be like, okay, see you later, someone else. No matter who you are.
And anyone, your supporting cast, when you come in off the bench, what's it going to be?
Who are you playing with? Are they making you worse now? Are your stats affected? Because as much as it's a team game, much more so than baseball, for example, it still matters what you do individually when big paydays are at stake. So, yes, is Marc Gasol going to be more of an offensive contributor? Who knows? After Serge Ibaka on the bench, who do you trust? Can they reel in Pascal Siakam's energy? Because he's a fireball, and that's what makes him so special. But those early fouls, those offensive turnovers, those are all the things that he has to refine, which was the same problem they had with him maybe two or three seasons ago, when they're like, can we refine him without taking away his spark?
But we're 2 weeks into the season. I mean, the NBA season starts on Christmas Day.
Right.
The next 6 weeks is about figuring out who you are, what your roles are, who can be slotted in here, how we can use so-and-so there, what is Ibaka's role going to be, eventually what can Ananobi develop into, what is Siakam now that he's the guy, what's he going to be, and where do Lowry and Fred fit in? Who's going to replace the Danny Green role effectively? I just have a hard time 2 weeks in starting to make definitive proclamations about what guys are they are.
You're no fun.
Well, I know.
You're
stake
no fun.
A claim.
Right.
Claim. They suck. Just say it. Say what's in your heart.
Don't. No
they're
slander.
They're going to finish third, fourth, or fifth this year.
It's interesting. You know, it's interesting.
Sure. No, but sure they are.
Yeah, they are. They're going to finish third, fourth,
that's
or
fair.
Fifth.
You know, Mandani, it's interesting that you say that, and I happen to agree with you. I think, like,
now he calls you by your last name. Yeah. He calls you by your first name.
Because
he wants his milkshakes.
He's flip-flopping back and forth.
Because I'm going to have a tick on his first name. I'm going to say it wrong. Blair's in my head now. But it's, I think it's really interesting what you say. And I agree with you. The NBA season sort of doesn't start until around Christmas, but the converse of this in this city, every single Maple Leafs game is analyzed to death from day one. And if you told a hockey fan, like, just be patient, whatever this team is 30 games from now, when Hyman's back, and they would look at you like,
You're insane. Like, but tell us right now what's going on.
Don't you know how we do things around here?
So why is that?
They had a parade. They won a championship.
Okay, so maybe that's the answer.
No, it is a big difference.
And Kawhi's gone, and it's a different dynamic altogether.
Right.
Perfect segue. The Raptors will see Kawhi this weekend. They'll go to they go on their road trip. They go to New Orleans, Portland. They've got back-to-back against the Lakers and the Clippers. We're going to go we'll start with you, Ashley. You get a one-on-one with Kawhi Leonard this weekend.
What
do you want to ask him? What question do you need to know from Kawhi Leonard other than did you really have your mind made up that Doc Rivers was the best coach you ever played for before you even took the floor with him? But
oh my gosh, would put me on the spot. Well, I want to know so many things. First of all, what's Uncle Dennis doing? I want to know how embarrassed he was for the city of Toronto when we followed him with helicopters and issued an official apology for being a news-driven organization and actually caring about the franchise and where he was going to go after. I'm kind of curious if he's into the load management conversation that surrounded him. I think last year was definitely important just because he had only played a handful of games coming off a very serious injury, and it really spurred a whole movement in the NBA at all. Like, you have David Fizdale cursing down load management when he's talking about RJ Barrett. It is a real conversation. Does he like that? Does he see himself as someone who wants to play a ton of years in the NBA, therefore he knows that he needs to limit his mileage in the regular season? Or is he the kind of guy who wants to get out and get after it every single game, and that's his mentality?
You know what I found interesting? He's been with the Clippers. How many games have they played? Six? Thursday and Friday, a lot of the national media in the U.S. was saying definitively, or there were some saying definitively, he is the best player in the NBA. They weren't saying that last year. He was one of the best players in the NBA.
But he wasn't. The year before, he played, what, nine games? Like, to me, look, you're not going to get an honest answer out of Kawhi about anything. My two questions would be, one, when did you ultimately know you wanted to go to L.A.?
Mm-hmm.
Not when you decided, you know, when did you know you wanted to be there?
Right, in your heart of hearts. When was it?
I'm guessing it was around last August or September.
Yeah, I think so.
Two, where did things fall apart with San Antonio? Where did it become to the point where you were finals MVP and you viewed Pop as a bit of a father figure to the point where you just didn't trust anybody in that organization anymore? And that organization for weeks and months quietly was trying to trade you before the deal with the Raptors even happened. Look, Kawhi a year ago wasn't the best player in the NBA because he was so many question marks. He had played seven or nine games the year prior for the Spurs. You couldn't put him in that conversation yet. Now you can.
Yeah, and to expand on that, LeBron's 34 now. Okay, he was 32 2 years ago when that conversation was happening.
Sure.
I think Kawhi is the best player in the game right now.
I think that's
And that's part of the reason.
Durant's not playing.
Yeah, and Durant's not playing.
And Steph's hurt.
Maybe that changes next year, but I think if you ask most NBA observers, if they're going to sort of be honest by the eye test, I think Kawhi is the best player. Just real quick, Jeff, the two questions I would ask him. One, do you trust the Clippers medical staff? If yes, why? If no, why? I'd love to know that answer. And then I would love to ask him, if a high-profile free agent came to you and asked you about the Raptors organization, what would you say? I would love to know. I would love to know how he answered that. But like you, of course, I don't particularly think Kawhi would give me much.
No, that's not the rules of the game. The rules is he took truth serum and you get the answers.
I'd love to. Yeah, I actually think if you could get truth serum into Kawhi, I think he'd be an amazing interview because he's one of the last superstars in any sport where you really know really very, very little.
There's a lot of
There's a lot of mis. We know nothing about him.
Well, nothing.
Not even very little. We know nothing
about his backstory.
I had this discussion with somebody who covered the team, and I said, I can't figure out whether Kawhi is the most mysterious high-profile athlete I've seen, or he's just the most basic, simple, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but the most basic, simple, focused athlete.
Maybe he could be like, both.
It doesn't seem like a guy who needs a lot of care and feeding, I guess is the way I'd put it.
I mean, immediacy bias, and they're not even the same in terms of superstardom. Steven Strasburg's kind of that way. He was the most hyped draft pick in baseball in forever. If you go back a generation, Barry Sanders maybe would be the comparison that way. We didn't know much about
Barry. And then when he and
He just retired.
And then he just retired sort of in with a few years left on him.
Right.
And kind of disappeared as a mystery man.
Yeah, I mean, the Kawhi is just a weird combination of someone who really is a gym rat. He loves to, I mean, that's not mythology. He loves to practice. He loves to play literally from his days at San Diego State to all his teammates. They say he comes early to the gym. He does his work. He loves to work. I think that's true. Where he is different, I think, than certainly every other NBA star is that he does not engage in any of the benefits of being an NBA star, whether it's trying to form your own companies or trying to attach yourself to celebrity or social media. I know he has some of this stuff, but that's what makes him very unique and interesting to me, is that his play, like his greatness on the court, would mean all of that stuff would be unlimited. Like if tomorrow, Kawhi Leonard called somebody and said, I want to be in a movie, he would get cast.
If he just wanted to be Willie Beeman all of a sudden.
Right. But
he
opts not to do that. And not only does he opt not to do that, he opts not to do that in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Which is kind
Although
of
Although he is in the
crazy.
Trailer for
He was. And that actually,
Terminator.
I saw that and it surprised me.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was pretty cool, but two, I was like, I did not expect that. I didn't expect that from Kawhi.
But maybe it's just because, I'm so sorry. Maybe it's just because we got a more censored version of him, though. Because in San Antonio, a smaller market, he was in a ton of those grocery store commercials.
That's right.
And he had like the punchline, and he was always like, I'm this dry guy who's going to like come in and like hit everyone with the comedy. So maybe it's just the Toronto version was different because he's such a workman and because he wants to get back to it, that his focus was like, I need to get back to basketball.
And it was a new market, he didn't know anything.
I need people to see that I'm serious about this, that I'm the best player in the NBA, and I don't do that by, you know, becoming like a star in the traditional sense.
Kawhi wanted to be Hollywood, he would have gone to the Lakers. He's gone to the Clippers. The Clippers just don't matter in that market.
Yeah.
They're not hot. They're not spicy. They're nothing. They are irrelevant.
They're the tickets you get if you can't get Lakers tickets.
Well, they might not be irrelevant
way
now.
Below that.
You think they're still irrelevant now
Absolutely.
With Paul George and Kawhi?
Yes, sir.
I don't know.
They're the tickets you get when you can't get Lakers tickets or UCLA tickets, or USC
they're
tickets.
They're tickets you get when you can't get a movie ticket.
That's all.
I think that's changed.
I don't.
Oh, come
that
on.
Is
I don't.
Not true.
One of you bring up on your phone
ticket.
Or your computer. This weekend,
the
Raptors play the Lakers on Saturday,
okay,
and the Raptors play the
Find
Clippers on Sunday.
Okay,
find out the price of the tickets in the upper bowl.
Right. StubHub, all right,
you know
we'll do that.
Yeah,
that's
we're
going
to do that. We're going to take
good
a break, come back, and talk about the big NFL game yesterday. Of course, the Vikings
game in Kansas City.
Game in Kansas City.
Bills Redskins.
Yet another quarterback in Matt Moore we'd rather have on the Vikings than Kirk Cousins. Now, we'll talk a little bit about the Patriots and the Ravens and what we learned from that game. It's a Monday roundtable. It's Ashley Docking, Arash Madani, Richard Deitch, and Jeff Blair on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, it's the Monday Roundtable on Writer's Block. It is Ashley Docking, Arash Madani, Richard Deitch, and Jeff Blair. Big NFL game last night. We talked to Amy Trask about it a little bit. The New England Patriots, a lot of people have, which had a lot of people proclaiming one of the best defenses we've seen. And
what was Amy Trask's takeaway from it?
Amy Trask's takeaway is stop talking about how bad somebody played and start talking about how good somebody played. No, and
Lamar?
Lamar, yeah. Front runner for MVP right now?
Yeah.
Arash?
Yeah.
Is there any... I'll ask you the question I asked Amy, and I'll ask all of us this. Did we learn more about Lamar Jackson last night or the New England Patriots?
I'm happy to go quick first. These sort of either or are tough. I think we learned something about both. We learned that Lamar Jackson can beat a Bill Belichick team, which for a first or second year player
and is fairly easy too,
is almost unheard of.
Yeah.
So he is a very, very special quarterback, and you know, obviously, certainly one to watch this year and heading forward. Let's hope they keep him healthy and he sort of doesn't get into any kind of situations where he tries to make an extra yard and gets hurt. But the one thing about the
Patriots, unlike Kirk Cousins,
The one thing about the Patriots, and this was brought up by a lot of NFL types. I know Rodney Harrison said this and some others. They really as great as the defense had been, they hadn't played really any good offense. And now I think over the next 5 weeks, like, they have Lamar, they have Mahomes. I don't have a schedule in front of me, but
I think they have Philadelphia coming up.
Yeah, they
have Wentz.
I mean, they have some bounce back.
Yeah. So I think, Jeff, how I would answer that is I think we will learn more about the Patriots defense in the next 4 or 5 weeks, and then we'll be able to make a judgment on whether this is like an all-time historic defense or just a defense that capitalized on some pretty mediocre offenses.
Mm. Ashley, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that it's a slight on the Patriots, because there were a number of instances where you see Lamar Miller and you're like, okay, they're flushing him out of the pocket. They have outside contain, and he's able to just like zip, zip, find this random gap that no one of regular athleticism would be able to do. Mm-hmm. So I think when it comes to stopping guys like him, and when you talk about Pat Mahomes and also Russell Wilson, and then like when you think further back, you're like Colin Kaepernick uses legs, RG3 before he got injured, Michael Vick. It was just their ability to be more athletic. Mm-hmm. So you can't game plan for that. You just have to be astute in those moments, and you really have to just hope for the best. And I know it doesn't sound like that's a solid plan, but you can only do so much. And to Amy's point, if someone just outplays you, or they're able to outmaneuver you, or they're able to be more athletic in those moments, then it's going to be a problem for you. And you have to hope things also go your way on the offensive end, that you get some lucky breaks, that you're able to capitalize on moments where the opponent's defense will falter as well.
John Clayton told us last week, Arash, that he thought Lamar Jackson was one of the smartest runners he's seen as a quarterback.
So Lamar takes over for Teddy Bridgewater at Louisville.
Yeah.
And Teddy was a bit of a runner, but he could run around and sling it too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where he was. And let's remember the NFL Lamar Jackson has entered into. It's in the aftermath of the RG3 era, when Robert Griffin as a rookie lit the world on fire. Yeah. And then every defensive coordinator and staff was told, go find a way to stop and fix this. And they did.
Right.
And RG3 is, you know, kind of vanished off the landscape. But Lamar Jackson, in a similar style, can still do it. To answer your original question, I learned a lot about Baltimore's defense yesterday. You know, Ed Reed's there. He's getting his Hall of Fame ring. And Ray Ray's there. And, look, they're not Ray Lewis and Ed Reed Baltimore. The whole thing about them is that they're a young defense. But to me, a guy like Marlon Humphrey really grew up last night. The way that defense flew around, they completely made Julian Edelman irrelevant when it mattered. Mohamed Sanu got his catches, a number of them early, but they're all underneath stuff. They didn't allow the Patriots to do anything outside of when they fumbled a punt return. They really neutralized New England's offense. And I don't know if they drew up the blueprint there, but what I learned about Baltimore's defense is that in a division with the awful Browns, the hopeless Bengals, and the Steelers, who are a shell of themselves, Baltimore, they're the second best team in the AFC, and they're going to battle Kansas City when Mahomes gets healthy to be right there with New England at the end.
That's what I was going to ask, and it's something Amy mentioned too, really. Patriots, Kansas City, after that?
Ravens.
The Ravens.
I mean, after that, you've got a bunch of
Houston and, some weeks look okay. The next week you're like,
That's in the NFC. But nobody thinks the Texans are going anywhere. The one thing I do want to bring up, because I think it's interesting, is Lamar Jackson reaffirms what happens a lot for college quarterbacks. By the way, African American quarterbacks who come from certain programs which are sort of spread offenses, right? They're sort of pass happy.
Sure.
And they get oftentimes like evaluated really poorly commensurate to their where they get picked in the draft. And if you remember, this is where like
the anonymous
scout quotes that floated NFL, they're total, if I could use the word BS.
You just did.
I'd love to use the actual word.
Use the actual word.
If you remember, 2 years ago, what was being said? Maybe this guy should become a receiver in the NFL. He's a great athlete.
It was Bill Polian that made that point, wasn't it?
And so I would love to go through the history. It's always African-American quarterbacks, let's just be blunt, who get evaluated with this kind of athleticism tag. look how great this guy is. I mean, obviously, you got to put the system around him, and you have to have great skill people around him. But, like, how, like, if you were to redraft that draft again, this guy looks like a number one overall pick.
Who,
but
Who went ahead of him? Baker, Sam Darnold.
They all went ahead.
Josh Allen.
Sam Darnold.
Is it Kyler?
No, that's this year.
Who else, it's a Cal guy.
Why can't I think of him? Josh Allen.
Rosen.
Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, at a minimum.
You had to do a redo.
You would take this guy over all of those guys, and if you were going to redraft it, even if you were a big Sam Darnold fan today.
I still think I draft Darnold ahead
okay,
of Lamar.
Really?
Yeah.
But you would then
I just wouldn't give him Adam Gase.
You'd go Lamar too.
Agreed? I put Lamar too.
Wouldn't be a question.
But is it because
and he went 29th.
They're building the offense around him to be able to run? Some of the guys that we've talked about before that are prolific on the ground is because they're great at scrambling and they can make something out of nothing. Right. What Baltimore is doing is they're calling his number in specifically designed plays to take advantage of this athleticism.
But he's far more accurate than the scouts would have led you to believe.
And I'm not saying that he's not, and I'm not saying that he doesn't have a good arm, but what they're doing in Baltimore is really using all of his skills to their full advantage. If he's plopped in another organization where they're not ready to utilize this because they're more concerned with his long-term health and safety, and they don't want him to go the way of Cam Newton, where he gets beat up because he's a body and he's moving and he's mobile, I don't know if the conversation is the same. Do I love this version of him? Absolutely. Would I take this style of quarterbacking every day? Sure. It's so exciting to watch. But he's in a very, very positive situation.
And I think what's really important in the Baltimore situation is that they didn't rush him. Right, Sam Darnold into the fire right away. Mm-hmm. Mayfield into the fire.
Josh Allen worked for Josh Allen a little bit so far, right? Right into the fire.
Sure. Mm-hmm. But Lamar sat behind Joe Flacco and learned the offense, sat in the meeting rooms, and it was a real, I think that's a real imperative way to develop a quarterback.
But that you know in the modern NFL, that just doesn't happen anymore. Like, I agree
with
you.
But it did.
You. It did in this situation, right. But rarely.
Sure.
There's Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I agree with you, but there's so much pressure on these organizations, especially when they draft so high, like Kyler Murray, to play these guys right away.
Yeah, and I think maybe it to your point, it might have helped Lamar that he was drafted where he was drafted.
Totally. 1,000%.
Well, look at Prescott. Prescott was behind Romo until Tony got hurt. Yeah.
But the thing is, if you're going to take that approach, it's a hell of a lot easier to do it with the 29th pick overall in the draft than the first or second pick overall in the draft.
The one thing to build on Jeff's point is a lot of times if you're a third or fourth round quarterback selected, that becomes the best situation for you because there's no external pressure that you're supposed to walk into the league and perform. And you could go behind Pittsburgh's case, Mason Rudolph is behind Ben Roethlisberger. And you look at some of these guys, Garoppolo was able to develop behind Brady.
Yeah,
I'm with you. I think that to me is the way you should develop quarterbacks. It seems like in today's NFL that the organizations, get fearful of a fan base who demands the quarterback play right away, and they almost never invest in development. It's almost I'm just trying to think of, other than Lamar Jackson, can you guys think of a first-round pick who didn't play right away in the last 5 years? I'm sure there is.
Quarterback?
No one comes to mind for me. Daniel Jones – He was drafted in this last draft.
Yeah.
So he's playing right away. I can't think of anybody.
Yeah, what would he sit, 2 weeks?
Who just didn't pop in. But I'm with you. I think that's historically all these quarterbacks from back in the day got to sit.
Didn't Jared Goff sit?
Who was the quarterback for the Rams?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. It was the whole Jeff Fisher.
Maybe you're right. It seems like there's just they're incumbent upon playing.
Because it's so valuable. Because we've seen what they can do in those positions.
I think the coaches think that the players are so pro-ready from these colleges that they put them in right away.
Our technical director, Andrew Holland, says Case Keenum played ahead of Jared Goff.
Oh, good pickup, Andrew. Thank you.
Shout out, Andrew.
As Arash and I start crying.
Case.
You guys knocked the Vikings, but they've had a great run in the last, 5 weeks. 6-3.
Oh, 6-3. Let's get excited about 6-3. You know,
and
I remember the days.
How close were they yesterday?
Oh, about 2 yards.
You know,
it's a better team than you guys are. You're not the Jet fans. I mean,
well, the Jets are just awful.
I'm just saying, you're going to make the playoffs.
The Jets are playing McMaster next week. Like, it's...
Western.
Yeah.
McMaster's 20-point favorites, I think, right. too.
You can't... When fans have baggage like this,
yeah,
you, can't negotiate
but
with them.
Ashley, don't you think these two are a little bit, like, overplaying their sad sack hand? Like, if
but
you,
what they're waiting for is the demise and the decline.
But the Vikings
the
are a playoff... Like, they're going to be a playoff team. Like, if you... I can live with you guys if you were Jet fans or Dolphin fans, but your team is going to be in the playoffs.
That makes
Richard,
it worse.
Going into...
They're gonna lose,
going
to lose, I know,
into
but...
next season...
That makes it worse.
Going into next season... I'm a little younger than Jeff, but going into next season, I will be 40 years old.
Oof.
And I have never seen my team play in the Super Bowl.
I have seen our team play in the Super Bowl.
And they've lost
repeatedly,
them all.
And they've lost every game. Everyone. Every time.
Even the Jets have a Super Bowl.
Yes, 69,
even the Jets.
Though.
Wow. Come on.
Strong year. Strong year.
I mean, all I'm saying, I can empathize with you guys to a point. There are NFL fan bases who have it far worse than you two. Bills fans have it far worse.
Browns.
Jet fans.
I will say
Browns
this,
fans.
Though.
How about Lions fans?
I will say this, though. I did take some solace, and I know we're up against the clock here. We'll take a break. But I did take some solace from the fact that last week a Vikings player was arrested for DWI and having a loaded firearm on the seat. That's almost like the glory days.
Right.
Almost like maybe it's a harbinger.
They had an extra 3 days off because they played the Thursday nighter.
Exactly.
What else would
what
you want to do in downtown
do?
Minneapolis?
So maybe that's... You know, maybe the cruise in Lake Minnetonka. Maybe it's coming back. I don't know about that. It is Writer's Block, the Monday Roundtable. Ashley Docking, Arash Madani, Richard Deitch, and Jeff Blair will take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the Leafs and a little bit about Major League Baseball and the Washington Nationals' apparently excellent visit to the White House today. It's Writer's Block on 590 and 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to the Monday Roundtable on Writer's Block. Well, Mr. Madani, Arash Madani, Ashley Dawkins, Richard Deitch, we have an answer to our question as to what it would cost to see the Clippers and what it would cost to see the Lakers play the Raptors, Mr.
Yeah,
Madani.
Somebody tweeted me, because friends of mine who are going told me how much cheaper the Clippers game is than the Lakers. $13.85, apparently, upper bowl seat.
U.S.
Upper bowl seat for the Clippers, the Lakers, same seat, $80. There you go.
Tells me something. Wow. Gotta be the same Knicks and Nets, right?
By the way, that's pretty good. That's, you know what? I would pay $13 in a second to watch the Raptors.
How much is a movie ticket?
It's about that. You're right. I mean, IMAX, the IMAX,
Clippers,
the whole thing.
Clippers VIP? Basketball.
VIP IMAX. Yeah, absolutely.
Your point's well taken, though. That's disappointing to hear.
It is what
there you
it
go.
Is.
I love the Clippers.
Why?
They are a fun team to watch. Have you watched them this year?
Stop being such a basketball purist.
No, I'm a Laker fan.
They play great defense.
I'm a Laker
They're
fan.
Unselfish.
The Clippers are kind of like when you like step on gum at the bottom of your shoe.
You guys
like,
are so.
What are the Clippers doing down there?
You two are celebrity oriented.
Yeah.
What do you got? A screening afterwards?
No, there's a bunch of banners up there. The Doc Rivers wants to cover up because he doesn't have any of his own.
Oh yeah.
You got a doc? You two are going to.
What have the Clippers done? I think they've won one playoff series.
Yeah, they've done. Again, this is the year.
Yeah. You're calling it now?
I think they're going to win.
This is way too much debate on the LA Clippers. I'm sorry. It really is. Let's talk about the Leafs. Actually, let's talk about baseball first. I want to talk about baseball. You just got off the World Series train.
Yeah.
You and your boy Anthony Rendon,
mm-hmm.
who you seem to have.
You seem to be much more interested about this.
Well, no,
I just
you guys seem to have a, you know, he seemed to be available, and he's what I can tell. Again, when your first word when you go back in the field after celebrating in the clubhouse is bring me bourbon.
Right.
I mean, I have a soft spot for you,
sure.
which Anthony Rendon did. What you after seeing those two organizations, those two teams up close, tell me what surprised you, Arash, the most about the Nationals and the most about the Astros, if you could.
The Washington Nationals played like a team with house money the whole way. They're 19-31 on the 23rd of May. They had to win their last eight just to get in.
Mm-hmm.
They do. They win the wildest of wild card games. They're down 3-1 in the eighth inning. They probably shouldn't have won that game. They get into elimination games and they win five of them. They won seven postseason games on the road. After a little while, they started believing their own nonsense. That let's just go 1-0 every day. Let's stay in the fight. Let's finish the fight. The Houston Astros seemed like a team that were so tight, winning 107 games. It just felt like nobody played loose. Nobody played free. And even when they got on their little run and took all three in Washington, when they came back to Houston, it felt like the Nationals just said, all right, we're just coming here to ball. And the Astros are like, we have to do this. We have to get this done now. So it's two totally different approaches from two totally different types of teams. And my favorite part about it is that the Nationals won with starting pitching, real starting pitching. No gimmicks, no bullpen games, no openers, real horses on the mound. They paid Patrick Corbin in the offseason. They paid Max Scherzer before that, and it paid off for him.
You know, it seems to me, Ashley, that one of the things the Nationals have taught us is the value of patience, both with Steven Strasburg and then, although it was Ken Rosenthal pointed out, Mike Rizzo may have been closer to firing Dave Martinez than we actually think he was. But the fact that they also they stuck with a manager that a lot of people thought was going to be fired. And I think, and then, of course, with the starting pitching as well, there really is a virtue to patience at some point, isn't there, in sports? Like, we forget that, I think, at times.
Well, yeah, just to piggyback off our NFL quarterback conversation, right? Maturation, figuring things out for yourself, being able to get the right group together, I think, is something that is still somehow perennially underrated in professional sports, that you can't just go get names. You can't just go get bodies. You can't just go grab someone who's statistically inclined to have fantastic performances, because at the end of the day, if the chemistry's not right, if people aren't pulling for each other, if they don't want each other to succeed, if they can't even talk on the same wavelength to each other, it's going to be an issue. And some of it does fall on the players to acclimate themselves and get to know each other and find out what works for you might not work for you, might not work for you. So that is a little bit of a personal responsibility. But do they want to do that with the team that they have? And so, of course, talent is involved, but it's such a finite recipe to get it done correctly that one bad apple can ruin it for everyone. And so when you talk about the Nationals and them just playing loose and being so happy for each other, and when even you pull it back to the Raptors, which I always love to do when I get the opportunity, that experience that they had pulling for each other, all underdogs, things like that just can't be impressed upon enough in terms of their importance.
I just want to add one thing about the Nationals. All the analytics folk who just buy into this, pro sports has become younger, faster, younger, younger, younger. That was the oldest team in baseball.
Yeah.
I think in baseball, more than any other sport, it's vitally important to have adults in the room. It is critical when you have Juan Soto as your starting left fielder and Victor Robles as your starting center fielder to have somebody there who's going to corral them.
You know, it's interesting you said that, because 2 years ago at the winter meetings, I remember when Ross Atkins was doing one of his media availabilities, he was asked about the importance of veteran leadership and sort of in, you know, creating whatever culture the Jays were trying to create. And he said very quickly, you know, that their experience from the Cleveland Indians, which I know fans don't want to hear, but their experience from the Cleveland Indians was that experience matters in the playoffs. Up until then, it's production. But once you do get in the playoffs, yes, there is something to be said for been there before.
So I'll tell you what Juan Soto told me. Here's a guy who a year ago was the finalist for Rookie of the Year, runner-up. Mm-hmm. He starts the season through the first 35 or so games, hitting .228. And he comes into the video room the next day, and Howie Kendrick walks in, and Howie Kendrick sits with him, and they watch video together. And then Howie Kendrick, 35-year-old Howie Kendrick, follows him into the cage, and they work together in the cage. And the next day, Howie Kendrick's there in the video room, and Howie Kendrick's there in the cage. And the day after, the same thing happened. And Juan Soto said, if not for this guy doing this and showing me things and listening to me and watching me, and you know, he said, it's one thing for a hitting coach to do it, but for somebody to do that for me, that's significant. Steven Strasburg said, never before in my career did we have guys who just sit and watch starting pitchers, watch video together and help the day before my start and exchange information the way this group does. That matters.
Yeah.
You can say whatever you want about what you think things can be, but the fact that you have now champions pointing this out to me is huge.
You know what? The other takeaway I have is I look at the Nationals, I look at the Red Sox last year, I look at the Chicago Cubs, and I look at the Astros. The Astros less than those other three teams. But it seems to me that maybe what we're seeing is the way forward in Major League Baseball now is you draft and develop your own position players, then you go out and buy pitchers or trade for pitchers, get guys after they've had their Tommy John surgery or that, you know, that horrible setback that every pitcher has. And I really think there's a lesson there for a lot of teams. Is that's the way to, you know, we talk about it's a young person's game and young controllable starting pitching is important. It's important, but I think it's more important to have young controllable position players, and then you just fill in with the pitching.
Yeah, I mean, the young controllable position players gives you a lot of flexibility. The one thing I want to add, though, because there's a lot of interesting things sort of from this conversation, is that so often, and baseball, I think, is one of these sports where we see it, is these veterans who get picked up either mid-year or late year, Sean Doolittle, for example, Daniel Hudson, obviously Kendrick. Like, they're not necessarily the best players on that team, but every postseason you see players like that, and this is where I agree with
Steve Pierce last year.
Yeah, MVP. I'm with Jeff in that, like, I think ultimately the best way to do this is to have cheap controllable assets at sort of position players, pay for the pitching, the Verlander types and the Scherzers. But at the end of the day, I think you have to have those types of guys, it seems like, to win in the postseason, because too often there is always some 30-something player who plays a role in a key pivotal game to win a World Series. And you do wonder, like, how much of that is experience or muscle memory or, whatever.
Being able to shake off a bad outing.
Or just, like, you know, part of that big C word, chemistry. Like, it feels like they're I don't think an incredible group of 25-year-olds from 1 to 25 would win a World Series, even if they were that
talented.
Totally
agree.
I think there is a place for veterans.
Listen to you guys advocating for the OGs out there.
Yeah,
get
man.
The elder statesman on the field.
Trying to keep our jobs.
Yeah, but at the same time,
I want more OGs and less Josh Rosen.
Yeah, you know, I think what it will be interesting this year to see in the free agent market if that's reflected or not. You know, like, look at MLB Network. If that's the case, if there's a change taking place, then a guy like Mike Moustakas is going to get more than simply a one-year contract.
They won't pay it.
You know, I still think young position players is the currency. But the idea that you had to have, you know, develop your own pitching and all that, I would just as soon, as I said, go out and pick up guys that everybody else has had to worry about. Appreciate you guys doing this. It was
fun,
guys. Ashley, thank you so much.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me.
Ashley Docking, Arash Madani, Richard Deitch. It has been the Monday Roundtable. The Monday Roundtable on Sportsnet 590, The Fan of Sportsnet 360. Mr. Deitch and myself will be back tomorrow. Have a great day.